Welcome to the Tournament Poker Edge podcast, brought to you by TournamentPokerEdge.com, the only podcast dedicated exclusively to tournament poker strategy. And now, here are your hosts, Ron Fezbuddy and Killing Bird.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Tournament Poker Edge podcast. I am Derek, a.k.a. Killing Bird, joined, as always, by my co-host, Ron Fezbuddy. How are you, sir?
Evening, my friend.
Good evening.
How you doing?
Late here on the East Coast. I'm doing well. I am very excited to be that we are joined by a very special co-host?
Co-host. He's called Coco the rest of the show. Welcome, Coco.
Azian All in 007 is here. What's up, sir?
Not much. Just chilling. Back in the online grind. Ready to talk some poker.
Are you back in the online grind?
Oh, absolutely. Day one. First thing. I was so excited.
I fired up my first tournament since the WSOP last night. And Yeah, go ahead. What are you going
to
say?
No. I go finish.
I was going to say it was – I tweeted about this, but it was it's quite the letdown to fire a withered U.S. site tournament with first place being 4.8K compared to the last tournament I played where I was deep for 300K.
it's so funny. I was talking to people about it. It's so hard to come back after playing 1Ks all summer to playing like an $11 rebuy or $50. It's really tough. You just got to play Sundays.
Yeah, it's tough. I'm like, I was like, oh man, what is the 12K? The $11 12K, really? Am I gonna reg for this? Like, am I gonna care? You know? But
yeah, it is a little weird. Yeah. I didn't really find it like depressing or anything. It was more just like, oh, this is different.
Yeah.
It felt strange.
You know, but it takes like 2 months. It just takes like 2 months.
Yeah, it won't take long.
A month actually, probably, and then you're like back to complete normal. It's fine.
Yeah, I did find myself battling a little bit with the multi-tabling thing. Like, all of a sudden, I was trying to six table, and I was like, whoa, this is a lot of tables.
You're just old.
Yeah
probably. I mean, even when I played online in Vegas, I would only play, like, two tables.
Yeah.
Because I was usually playing, like, a WSOP.com event, and then, like, one random Bovada or something.
And usually tweeting at Card Runners pros about fighting them.
Yeah.
Yeah, a little feisty there, Derek.
I was shocked and happy at the same time. Yeah. Like, it was pretty amazing. KB get a little fired up. We'll get into that later, I guess.
It was a fun summer.
Yeah, let's catch everyone up with what's been going on with everyone. It's been a while since we podcasted. Obviously, the WSOP is over. We all will go through sort of how our summers went. We'll talk about the main event. We have some hands that I definitely want to discuss that I've been thinking about for 2 weeks now. I know.
Let it go, Diego. Let him go.
It's really hard.
You're out.
It's really hard. And, you know, as I was starting to move on to I just got to admit, I have, like, sickness over being away from the WSOP. Like, I just loved it. Like, I don't know. I'm such a fanboy. Well, I guess not fanboy is not the right word, but I just love being there. It's like the highlight of my summer. And finally starting to get over it, and then you have this amazing day six, day seven of the main event that was epic on Twitter to follow, which has got me right back in it. So I thought it was a good idea for us to jump on here and do our podcast to talk about it. So we're going to talk about our summers, talk about the main event, and we've got some hands, right, guys?
Yep.
All right, so let's catch up. What have you been up to, KB?
Well, I grinded I was going to say I grinded pretty heavy leading up to the World Series, but I actually kind of cut my schedule back a little bit, not only in terms of number of days playing, but also number of tables I was playing and number of hours I was playing each session, which was good, I think, although I'm on a little bit of a downswing, so maybe it's not good. Maybe I need to get back to, like, 11 tabling Bovada Turbos. I'm not sure. But I felt very ready going into the summer, like, I mean, and I guess you say that every year, and if you don't say it, then you probably did something wrong throughout the year. But I definitely felt the most prepared I ever was, which I guess makes sense. And the summer was good, I guess. I mean, like, results-wise, it wasn't anything to brag about, but like I built stacks in almost every tournament I played.
Yeah.
Played late into day one or made day two in almost every tournament. And yeah, and it was just, it was a really fun summer, but it just seems like things did not come together in the end of any of them, you know? Like, I mean, I don't think there was a tournament where I didn't go, you know, like go to dinner with like an above average stack. Like it was just early levels were great and everything always went wrong.
Yeah, I mean, I can't tell you how many times we went outside and like I was like, oh, I just got starting, and Derek's like, oh, I quad it up already. Yeah. I'm just like, what? Like, how is this real? Like,
yeah.
But Derek, you didn't even tell everyone. You came out early, so like you actually had like from the first tournament you played when you got out early, you had more time because it wasn't really planned.
Yeah, I ended up coming out, I guess, about what, 6 days early or something. Basically, like I wasn't going to be there for the Monster Stack, and I ended up getting there the day before the Monster Stack, which was awesome because that's such a fun tournament. Yeah. And I do think, like, I think we talked about this last year when I took like 6 days in the middle and went home and like spent time with family and stuff. Like, there's something to be said for being fresh, and I certainly felt fresh the entire summer this time because, you know, I missed the first 3 weeks or whatever it was.
Right.
And I think that probably helped in terms of, like, building those stacks and playing well and all that stuff. But, yeah, I definitely felt really good about the way I played almost every hand. And, I mean, you know, certainly you can always go back and find things you might have done slightly differently, and we might talk about one of those hands later. But all in all, I was happy with how I played. I had one cash, if you count it as a cash. Mm-hmm. People keep asking me, oh, did you have any caches in Vegas? And I'm like, sort of. because it was in the 50-50 tournament where a min cash was less than the buy-in. So I don't really know if that counts or not, but it's on my Hendon mob, so god damn it, I'm counting it.
Wait, so what was your caches versus played? And like, you know, obviously if it's like 1 for 11, like you gotta remember it's like half of a Sunday. But like
I definitely don't, like some people are like, oh wow, you didn't cash anything, and it's like, well, that's not really that weird. I only played, I believe it was 8 tournaments. And I played one daily deep stack that I got made fun of for playing.
I played a deep stack. I busted in 3 hands. I got ace king, lost half my stack, and I late reg, so it was like I had like 25 big blinds. I lost half my stack on ace king. The next hand I got aces and I lost the kings. Like I was in there for like 3 minutes, and I know I made fun of you, Mark, for busting a tournament early a couple of weeks ago, but literally three hands.
It was a 1K, and it was a good structure. So
yeah, yeah. No, yours was definitely worse. You were definitely you were definitely the worst player.
But yes, it's not like it was like, oh my god, I bricked so hard. Mark, what was the stat on Darren Elias?
I mean, yeah, like you have guys like that, Sean Buchanan, 0 for 24, probably maybe more. I mean, the thing is out there, it takes one. Like, you know, I was reading something on Ivy stats for the main event, the times he cashes, and his stat for the WPT is the same thing. The times he cashes, he's like final table slash winning, you know. So in the money, like I guess usually online, like good is like around 20, but like players that win more are like closer to 13.
I was just going to say 13% seems the right number if you're playing.
Yeah, so I mean, and just like imagine it a Sunday. I mean, there's got to be some math involved, but I'm sure you're less likely to cash in these minefields than an online, just a weekday tournament or something.
Yeah. I was definitely super disappointed to not cash the extended levels tournament, which was the one I made day two of. But it was just one of those tournaments where, like, I don't even remember the hands. I just know that, like, every time I opened, I would miss and have to fold to, like, a raise, or somebody would donk lead and somebody else would raise and I would fold. Like, it was just absurd how many hands I lost on day two. And my table was really, really, really tough. Like, it was not an easy table at all. Like, it was really hard to open without getting 3-bet.
That's often how it kind of ends in these tournaments. Like, it doesn't always end, or it doesn't always end with like some big all in, or you know, you get it in bed, or you get cooler. A lot of times, it's just like you were at 40 bigs, and then a couple hands didn't go your way. You're at like 28, 27 bigs. The level goes up, and now you're at 18, 19. Like, and then that's just kind of what happens a lot. Like, and you know, it just staying afloat is so important, but that just happens. That's
yeah.
a, common story.
Yeah, and sometimes there's not a whole lot you can do about it. I mean, I remember even at one point going, okay, I need to start being a little more aggressive if I'm going to do anything at the table. So I finally picked a spot to 3-bet, and I snap got 4-bet, and I was light. Like, I had, Jack 8 suited or something. I'm like, fuck my life.
Yeah, that happened to me, too, in the bounty, and that, we'll talk about that later, but that happened to me, too, and it was significant damage to my stack. And then the blinds went up next hand, and you see exactly what I was just talking about. You went from, super comfortable to, ooh, I'm kind of getting into the zone here. So.
Yeah, so that was pretty much the story of my summer. I think I ended up finishing, 60 off the money in that one, and then everything else was just, bust last level of the night, or, in the case of the main event, best last hand of the last second to last level of day one.
Now, let me ask you, I was listening to the TPE Live podcasts, which, by the way, you guys did a great job on that this year. So if you people want to hear more of sort of these conversations while we were out at the WSOP, there were a lot of Derek and Mark TPE lives that they recorded, which talked about specifically while they were in tournaments or just finishing up tournaments. But one of them I have to ask you about, which we haven't talked about yet, is your dream, the dream you had of me and Casey. Can you walk me through exactly what the rest of the listeners through what that was?
I don't know what it means, but it was funny because I didn't remember the dream until Carlos was saying something about how he had a dream.
Yeah.
And I was like, wait, I had a dream too.
Yeah.
And it was me, you, and Big Dog in a treehouse.
I'm already out. I'm tapping out.
Yeah.
Tapping out.
It was a really nice treehouse too. You could stand up in it and stuff. And there was a door that had an opening for a door that had no door. And basically Big Dog was just ripping on you for how you played a hand. And you were really, really sad, and you kept turning around, putting your head down and stuff. And then all of a sudden, you just walked over to this open door and you jumped. And I looked out, and you were laying on the ground whenever you see a body in a movie who jumped off a building all crooked and stuff. That's what you looked like. And in my head, I'm just oh my god, who's gonna do all the tech stuff for TPE? We're completely
what a dick.
Fucked now.
Yeah, right. Thanks. My leg is fucked up. My head is off. Crooked.
I'm paralyzed. And he's like,
you were dead. You were definitely dead.
Yeah.
Didn't answer emails.
Yeah. My kids broke no father, and he's worried about who's gonna post the video tomorrow.
Oh my god, I forgot something else now. Now that you said your kids were gonna grow up without a father, it reminded me that Cindy called. And she was really mad, and she was wanting to know where you were, and I kept trying to make up excuses for where you were. And I think she thought you were probably out of some strip club or something, but it really wasn't anything that bad. You were just dead.
It really wasn't that bad.
But I couldn't tell her that. It was a crazy dream.
Well,
but
I'm gonna have to have a talk with Casey for making me dream.
Oh, and in the dream, Casey was not upset at all. Either.
Yeah,
he was just he kept going on about how bad the hand. So there you go.
Nice.
So, nice. But enough about me, Mark. How was your summer?
I would say overall summer was a success. Came in, I guess, basically coming into the series for the first, 4 or 5 months of the year, I was kind of focused on just getting my body in the shape for the series. Lost some weight, went to Tahoe 3 months before, worked out, tried to get my back strong so I could sit and play more tournaments, longer hours. So that went well. So when I got there, I felt fresh, ready to go, and I'm out there the whole time, so it's really important to get, honestly, physically in shape. Not that I'm still a fat ass, but just to try to sit the whole time, because it's tough. People don't realize, the guys in the main event, that's insane what they do. They're playing 12 hours, 13 hours, not sleeping.
Yeah.
It's tough. So, yeah, came out there. I think I played maybe around 12 tournaments, one cash and one really good run, which is how I usually am, especially live. I'm honestly, every tournament I play, I just try to win. I don't worry about cashing, although I should in some spots, but I just try to win. So when I do cash, most of the time, at least for the Dubsofts, it's been like a decent cash. So yeah, I had a good run in the 2500.
Tell us about that. What,
27.
Yeah,
that was a grind. Day three, had Akari on my left, Ty Ryan. I had a really tough table. And throughout the tournament, that was a really tough field, which I live for. Like, I want to play against the best players, sure. My ROI is not as high, but I want to beat the best players. Just, I do, for my own satisfaction. Mm-hmm. But yeah, day three, came in with a healthy stack and, you know, lost two flips. And I wasn't upset at all. Like, I came home and KB saw me and he's like, wow, I was kind of shocked you're not really pissed off. And I'm like, no, man, like, honestly, like, if you feel – like, I felt I played well and I felt I made the right decisions. So,
you know what? One thing I noticed about the house, and so for those who don't know, you guys rented a house, right? And you had a bunch of other poker players there too, right? It wasn't officially a TPE house, but it was a bunch of folks that kind of are friends of TPE, I guess. Call it, right? And I came out for 1 week and stayed there for a couple of days during that. And man, it's like just people punching in, punching out. Like, yeah. Made it to day two, get busted, no big deal, going to go back out and do it tomorrow, or, yeah, like, I'm going to day two, and no one's, like, jumping up and down, it's just, like, business, everyone's just doing their business there, like, it was pretty professional, I would say, and not emotional, emotional attachments to what you guys were doing, which is impressive to say.
Yeah, and I think that has to do with a lot of people, like, I mean, all of us have kind of worked on our mental game. Yeah. The two guys there, James and Pete, really good guys. But we're all aware of how the mental game is like needs to be really strong, especially out there when you're dealing with like these massive buy-ins. So you're going to have these massive swings, one tabling. I thought the house was awesome. Like, everyone was positive. But, yeah, we were kind of clocking in and clocking out.
Yeah, it was definitely – it was different and – pretty cool. Like, not any better or worse than past or future houses. It was just much different.
Yeah.
And I enjoyed it. Like, it was a weird change of pace.
Yeah.
I mean, we did get lucky because the guys who were staying with us were super cool. And we would have, like, random other people, like, stay for two nights here, two nights there. And everybody was really cool. Like, everybody got along great. Mark said, like, there was a lot of, like, meditation going on. And, like, I think we ate a little better this year.
Right. No, they were good guys, and they were all, the time I was there, really good to talk to about poker. Like, they all had good poker minds. They all, like, I actually felt like it, I know it's like, probably negligible impact, like, because in that small time frame, like, how much better could I get at poker from talking to people?
Right.
But, like, it put me in the right mindset for thinking about, like, hand combinations and card substitution, and just like the way they talked about poker gave me the right, I think, mindset for going in and thinking about hands. Especially Ryan Sanford, right?
Ryan Van Sanford.
Van Sanford, right. What is he on?
He's like Tilted EV on TPE, and then he's Ryan TYFL.
Yeah, TYFL, yeah. I obviously know him very well, Ryan. I obviously follow you. I can't remember the order of those letters you put in.
I know, I always get it wrong.
Ryan TYFL, who is a WPT winner from Jacksonville.
And had a great summer.
And I remember we went out at one night to PT's pub after everyone busted and had a couple beers, and he showed up. And, like, I just love the way he thought about hands. Like, it just pumped me up for playing and feel like it got me in the right mindset. So that was really like the fun part for me about the people in the house and spending the time with them, is that it was really intelligent discourse on the game, nice people, and chill. It was just good house.
Yeah, we did.
I remember.
Go ahead.
I was going to say the first day I arrived, I think Mark, you were playing. I don't remember what you were playing. You might have even been on a day two or something, but I showed up at the house and basically walked in the door, and James and Pete were analyzing a hand in, like, ICMizer or Flopzilla or something. And for the first 2 hours I was there, that's all they did was analyze that one hand. They kept changing the ranges, changing the card combination, changing it. And I was just like, okay, this is going to be a little more serious this summer. I'm ready. Let's go. So, yeah, it was fun.
Different generation. I mean, the guys we were with are – bit younger, like 27, and the guys that would come over 25 all the way down to Ryan, who I think is 22. Yeah. So, yeah, you have a different mix of guys, and the newcomers, like, their generation is big. They're big math guys. Yeah. The ICMIs are Flopzilla. Excuse me. Bunch of those other programs. But what I was going to say was we actually did a review one day, and I think there were eight of us, and we probably could have charged $10,000 if someone sat in that. I mean, that was like – the most intense review from eight different poker minds that all play completely different. And, I mean, some of the hands were taking 30, 40 minutes, and I think we spent like 4 to 5 hours. And if you didn't come out of that a better player, then you shouldn't be playing poker, because that was like some of the most intense study I've ever done in my life. And I was like, holy shit, like, fuck, like, I wish we would have done that every night.
I love that. I think my favorite – series of all time on TPE is Dallas Jace's advanced hand history review, where he hand analysis, where he went into, I think it, he literally did an hour by himself analyzing a hand, and going through all the combinations, like not just like combinatory analysis, but like thinking 2-3 streets down the road combinatory analysis.
Yeah, I love that series too. And it's the series you're talking about.
It's such a great series. Which, by the way, it got it got mixed reviews because some people just don't want to hear that shit. Some people just don't you know, they just don't, they don't want to. And not, you know, I completely disagree with people who don't like that, but to each his own. But some, like, if you love it, that is the one, right? And I love that. And I'm that's kind of the vibe I got from the hand talk, which was awesome. Awesome to be part of.
Yeah, this was people should do this more often. Like, we basically hooked the laptop up to the big screen in the living room, and we all just sat on the couches and the chairs and all watched it, and one guy had the mouse and he would control the hold the manager. And like, if you got a group of friends that play poker, like, and it's also a way more relaxed way to do it than like a Skype session or something, because you can kind of like get comfortable, have a beer, you know, you can get up and use the bathroom when you need to. Like, it, I don't know, I found it way more easy to spend 45 minutes on a hand sitting in that living room than I would have on Skype. Like, on Skype, I would have been on Facebook,
Twitter. I would have been multitasking and, you know, the lore, you know. Fuck, man, I wish I was there for that. I guess that when I was there.
Oh, you were there. We just didn't invite you over. No, it was actually – it was almost the very – it was like the very end. Like, we were all done playing.
I know.
It was, I think it was the day before the main event.
That's why – for me, it was the day before day 1A, and I was like, why didn't we do this the whole time? Like, this is so stupid, but
– yeah, you could make time for that, like, every, like, 2-3 days you could do that, like, given that. Yeah. So, you know what? Let's do that
if
next year.
If you live together, I mean, I still do – I do that. KB does that too. Like, we study quite a bit, but that atmosphere of being in the same room is like, I don't know, it's something else. Yeah. It was pretty amazing, and to have that many people that are as good as everyone is, it was pretty incredible.
Yep.
Yeah.
Awesome.
It definitely made me realize that Ben Reason is a genius.
Yeah.
He's the but you knew that already.
No, I knew, but like, I don't know, something about that atmosphere made it more apparent to me. Maybe it was because there were more people, like, throwing things at him to think about. And don't get me wrong, everybody in the room was not. It's not like he was way smarter than everybody else. Like,
No. Ben is the GOAT. He's one of the best coaches there is out there. He's a TPE pro too. Tweet at him to get him to make freaking video for us.
Yeah, you know what? Yeah, I did. I mean, I met Ben once before, and I've talked to him on Skype. But after meeting him in person and spending time with him, I'm going to harass him to make some more videos for us.
KB and I have been trying for a year and a half. He's busy, you know. He's got a big stable. He travels a lot, so
and
I get it.
He's definitely the traveling pro.
And he does a lot of coaching as well. But yeah, he's the GOAT.
I know we got to get to Diego's summer too, but before we do that, I want to ask you, Mark, about your prop bet with Ben.
So Ben's one of my good buddies. I was living with him in Tahoe. Big influence on my career. Good friend. We did a prop bet for next year, where we spun a wheel for like how much we were gonna bet, and the total ended up being $12K. And then we spun a total. We spun the wheel again, a different wheel, for how many tournaments we would have to play next year. All $300 – I think it was $300 buy-in, and, like, it has to be, like, a tournament. And, you know, there was 30, there was 25, there was 22, there was 12. 18, 16, whatever, all these numbers. And, like, I'm sitting there, like, I mean, this year I played 12. Last year I played 7. The year before that, I can't even remember. But this was good motivation for both of us. So we spun it and it hit 22. So now we have a bet where we have to play fucking 22 tournaments next year at the series within the 50 days or whatever it is.
What?
And if
really?
if the other person doesn't do it, they have to give the guy $12,000.
Do they have to be bracelet events, or can you play
other stuff? It just can't be the deep stack. It can be, like, other stuff, too.
Oh, okay. All right. You know what? That's good.
It's good.
No, that's good. You need to play more.
Right. It's not a matter of me not wanting to. It's just
I know you're back.
I have problems with my back. Yeah, I hate to make that excuse. But, yeah. And then we did a $3,000 bet on a total cashes, which he's a little bit of a favorite. Ben's better live for sure, but I'm not worried about that. I can still beat him.
You guys need to put something in there about if you make a lot of deep runs, it doesn't, you know, like maybe you need to make it like 22 days or something like that.
Yeah, that'll be good though, because like someone makes, then like I told Ben, I was like, you can just go fire the win 600 re-entry and just shit like $5,000 to the field. That'll be good for the poker economy.
Plus, you can always stay longer too. I mean, there are. I tweeted about this the other day. There's still people there grinding. Like they're still playing. Like, you know, Venetian $5,000, the friggin', I don't even know what's going on. Bellagio Cup or something.
I am going May 25th to July 20th next year.
So you
I don't
know
have...
what you could do. Like if you're at 21 tournaments, and you literally should go play the $5,000. Because if that'll get you to 22, you might as well go play the $5,000 for $5,000 and actually have a chance of winning money. You know what I mean?
Yeah, but if Ben plays 22, it's a wash.
Oh, okay.
So like, it's just basically designed so both.
Got it.
But I'm fine with that. Like, I have the back issue. Ben has Ben likes to play live cash, so it's going to be tough for him too in a different way. Right. But I think it's good for us. I want to play more, too. Like, I hear about all these guys playing, like, 30, 35 tournaments. And I'm just like, holy shit, I'm old.
I guarantee if I was out there a whole summer, I'd probably play 30 tournaments. When I'm ready to play poker, I want to do nothing
else. You say that, dude, but you're there 5 days. So, of course, you want to play when you're out there 5 days. Stay there a month and a half, and you'll want to shoot yourself in the face.
Nope.
You're lying, Diego. Nope. And Katie, back me. You know I'm wrong.
I'm ever able to play the whole summer, I will take any profit that I'll play the most days out of anyone. Even if I'm 68. Even if I'm 68.
Okay, but you're not going to be playing on your best game. That's for sure. Really hard to play your best out there when shit starts to go bad, especially early. And hopefully that wouldn't happen to you.
Yeah,
and you're 0-10.
That
you're going to be a cluster.
Oh, okay. You know what? Then yes, you're right. I would take a break at that point. But if I'm doing reasonably well, nothing makes me happier than getting up and playing poker.
Sure, but like the reality of the situation is like 0-10 is kind of standard.
Yeah,
so
I know.
You start to go 0-10.
No, you're right.
Pocket like 50.
I know. I was 0-15 in my last 15 before this series, so I get it.
Yeah, and I mean that alone, that starts to like, I mean like, and then you just want to keep playing. It's like, no, I need to take a day off. So like, yeah, it's a tough balance. I have a feeling one of us will buy out of that at some point. But yeah, I mean it's brutal because the buy-ins are so big.
Yeah, it adds up. I will say this: I think this is the first year where I never went and played a tournament I didn't want to play. Like, there's many times in the past where it would be like, come on, we're all going to play this 300 or this Binion's 1K or whatever. You have to come play. I'm like, fine, I'll go play. But, like, this year it was, like, I was just always – I had days off scheduled between everything, so I just always had time to, like, recuperate. It was great.
I think all three of us will agree on it. It's basically like Christmas for us when we were, like, 5 or 6. Like, I mean, the day after I punted the main event, which – we'll get into later because I don't want to talk about it right now. but the day after I came home and then I sat at home and I was like, God damn it, I can't wait. Like,
yeah,
the days again. Like,
I know.
Love it out there. And like, to those of you, the TPE people that haven't been out there, it's amazing. Like, there's nothing like it. You get like the chills walking through the Rio hallway. Yep. It's pretty amazing. And yeah, I hate, like, being back here, and now I'm like, God, I get to look at a screen all month.
Yeah.
But
you get to make consistent money, at least, when you're
yeah, that's true, but, like, Yeah, I mean, but it's so fun. Like, oh, just you go deep in something and you're looking at, like, you know, $550,000, but you got to give your backer half or something like that. Because actually, we've talked about this before. Everyone that plays at the World Series sells action. There's very few people that don't sell action. But yeah, it's still fun. I mean, and then, you know, people. I kind of enjoy playing one table as opposed to online. I think it's fun. I like chatting with people.
Well, I love playing.
I'm gonna cry. I miss it.
No, I want to pick up on something you said there. Playing one table and playing, just being aware. And there was a comment on 2+2 about Joe. Is it Joe McKeegan? Is that his name? The guy who's Joe McKeehan.
McKeehan.
And there's, like, you know, a lot of chatter about, like, is he a luck box or is he good? And people have played, you know, he's a pretty well-known live grinder.
Yeah, he's amazing. So
I'm not saying anything about his skill level because I've never played with him. But, given his results, he's got some sick-ass results. And we'll get into that when we go through everyone. but what one of the comments was, like, no one is more aware of what's going on at the table than him, is what someone said who's played with him. Like, he is he just sees every detail about everyone and what their strategies are, how they're playing, what they're doing. And that's one of the things that I love about playing one table and playing live, is that it's not just, you know, obviously there's the math involved and the rep, you know, getting your reps in, and the more you play, the better the more you'll regress to the mean or to your true ROI. But, like, when you're playing one table live, it's like game on. It's adrenaline. It's pure focus. It's like I got this Fitbit before I came out to the WSOP. my wife and kids gave it to me for Father's Day, and it's pretty cool. It measures your heart rate and how many steps and all that stuff. And it sends your heart rate to your phone and it tracks it.
I love this.
So you can – it measures your heart rate. Like, and I love looking at this because, like, it tracks your heart. Like, I like looking at my heart rate throughout the various course of the day. And, like, my resting heart rate is, like, 62 or 63 beats per minute. You know, it's pretty low. I'm a pretty even-keel guy. And – you know, you look at it, and then maybe if you're walking up the stairs, it goes up to, like, 98, or, you know, if you're, you know, if I'm chasing the kids or something, and there's points where it peaks, but it usually rests between the 60s and the 70s. And I tweeted this, I looked at my Twitter feed for a picture of this, but the first day I was playing, my heart rate was above 90 for 6 hours that day.
Oh, jeez. Oh, shit.
Like, my heart rate was above 90, and I wasn't, like, nervous or anything like that. It's just that you're so, like, it's, like, primal in a sense, where, like, you're just looking at every, you know, you're just, like, at the table, looking at everyone, looking for the details. And that's how I play. I pay attention, and I watch everything, and I feel like, as far as my game goes, I'm pretty good at like, knowing where people's heads are at, who's ready to punt, understanding stack sizes, trying to devise, like, how does this guy play? And my heart rate was elevated for 6 hours. It actually told me I was burning fat for 6 hours while I was playing poker, which I thought was awesome, because I said that to my wife, and I said, we got to, you know, get me back out here more often, because this is really good help.
So, I'm at 90 pounds.
Yeah, exactly. I did lose weight on the trip, so maybe it actually does make sense. Yeah, sitting at home and getting your reps in, I miss the live aspect of it. That's like, it is like Christmas, because it's like you get to be completely. You know what? Actually, and this is I'm actually reading a book called Flow, which is about how people get optimal performance, how people get to optimal performance, and a lot of the factors about when people perform optimally. The biggest one is you get in a situation where all you can do is focus on something, and you're completely free of distractions, and you spend enough time getting there where you now start to focus solely on what you're doing. And for me, live poker does that, because I'm not surfing 2+2, I'm not distracted or listening to music. I mean, I guess you could do all those things, but I choose to put those things away, and that's why I don't tweet that often when I'm playing. But I like I feel like I get in the flow when I'm playing live, and I don't get that as much from online. It's just a different feeling. So I can't wait to go back. It is Christmas for me.
Yeah.
I will say this, though, and I don't know if you guys can relate to this or not, but one thing I realized this year is, I don't know if it's age or experience.
It's definitely age.
Playing. It's probably the age.
Okay.
I can't stand half the people at my table anymore. It's life-tilting. I mean, don't get me wrong. There's some very nice people, very cool people who I have had great conversations with and I've loved playing with. But, man, between the guys who take 3 minutes every decision and the guys who berate the dealers and the guys who don't tip the cocktail guy when he brings your drink over and the people who berate other players and talk strategy at the table, like, it made me want to throw myself off the top of the Rio sometimes.
But that's what I wanted to say. I want to add this. Like, the people you don't like are usually scummy people, like, especially at the table. Like, sure, the guy that takes 3 minutes, that gets annoying, but the guys that you really hate and I can't stand either, and I'm sure Diego's the same way, are the ones that are just rude, whether it be to the dealer, like, he throws the cards at the dealer when, like, the flush gets there on the river, or something stupid where, it's just, like, grow up. And I think, like, you have this cocky generation coming up now where – they just don't really have much respect for the game. I think I see it for most of the young guys. And it's kind of sad, actually, because you hear this all the time. It's supposed to be fun. Like, it's okay to smile and have a good time.
Yeah.
Some people don't look at it that way.
Yeah, I can't really weigh in on that because I don't make my career doing it. I know you do, so you have the right to say that. I'm a serious amateur. To do more than play poker, and I do put a lot of time and work into it, but I don't have I know I'm going to get a paycheck regardless of whether or not I win a tournament, and and so I don't get as emotionally invested in the life. Like, I know that I'm going back to a normal life, and so I can imagine, like, doing this every, like, you know, 5 days a week for 6 to 8 months, like, that must be a grind, man. I mean, that just must be tough, like, and especially if you're running bad. So I kind of sympathize with people who, not that they're scummy, but maybe they're just not in good moods when they're playing. You know,
they're just mangy live pros.
Yeah. Those I kind of get it, especially if you're not running good. But if you're running good and you're a scumbag, jump off a bridge. Like, what the fuck?
and the truth is, too, if you're miserable playing poker, why are you doing it?
Well, that's right. That's fair. That's absolutely true.
Yeah. And don't get me wrong, by the way. Like, I recognize that some of that perception is on me. Like, that's my fault. You know, like, it's something I apparently need to work on. I think I've just lost a lot of patience for people.
Well, you know what? I mean, honestly, you're just a kind guy. Like, not to, you know, use, like, you know, too soft the word, but, like, you're just a nice guy, like, and what, like you can't even fathom why people would be such douchebags. Like, I get that. So I feel like that way sometimes. Like, why would you do that? Why would you throw something at the dealer? Like,
how could you ever get mad at the dealer that has nothing to do with
income? Right.
Yeah. That's still mind-boggling to me. You could get the dub sob dealers are pretty horrendous. I mean. Yeah.
Usually, like, my thinking goes to, like, well, like, where else can I go and play a tournament with 2,500 people, and how else are they going to get that many dealers trained that fast when most there aren't that many dealers out there that could support this tournament?
And they don't get paid shit.
And they don't get paid much. So, like,
they pay for their room and board out there. So, most dealers break even after the summer.
Yeah.
It's like a vacation for them.
Yeah.
So you have some really good dealers, too. Shout out to the dealers and the DubSoft staff. I mean, for the most part, everything went pretty well, other than maybe the cards, which the World Series did take care of. Eventually, it took a little longer. But, they did a good job for the most part, I'd say.
I think so, too.
Yeah.
But, all right, Diego, let's hear. So, get into before the series. You were been doing well online coming into the series, and then tell us how you did out there.
Yeah, I'll make this short too, because I want us to get to the main event, and I want us to get to some hands. So basically, leading up I hadn't played a lot over the winter, but then around February, you know, once the schedule came out and I saw what was coming, and I started getting the fever, I was like, yeah, let's get back in the grind, and I just, you know, for lack of a better term, crushed Merge for 2 months. Like, I never ran as well as I did for these 2 months. Like, I would just turn the thing on and, like, be in the high roller final table, like, 3 hours later, almost every night. It was pretty sick. And so I had great 3 months leading up, ran up a nice bankroll, and then stopped playing pretty much because I made enough money where it would take me 3 years to get paid on Merge. And so I kind of lost the motivation. And I can't deposit easily on the other sites. So, you know, like, I can't deposit it all on Bovada because I'm from New York. And, you know, like, yeah, sure, I can cash on ACR, but, like, I got to get my money off of Merge first to do that because I don't, you know, I'm not going to use too much of my life roll. And I do occasionally cash on ACR, but I also have no bankroll management on the U.S. sites. So, like, I'll put $500 in there and then play the $500 million guarantee. So, anyway.
You need to go read your bankroll management article.
Yeah. I know. I'm like the worst. When people ask me about bankroll, I'm like, you know what? Just go read the article and do as I say, not as I do. but, yeah, so I had a good – in the lead-up, I did really well online. I felt prepared. And, you know, what I did differently – this year is, like, leading up to the World Series, I would just do a shit ton of studying. A lot of, like, video watching, a lot of reading, and, like, to the point where I would – I know it's going to sound, like, counterintuitive to someone who is part of a training site as well. But, you know, I would, like, literally be reading, like, an Ed Miller book on the plane out to the WSOP, right? And, like, for the week or two before I went out, I didn't do much staying at all. Like, I did up to that point. I played up to that point, but then I just kind of cleared my mind and took a break from poker. And, you know, it's like one of those things where it's like, you can't cram for the final. Like, you don't know it by then.
Good metaphor.
You know, like, if you
so
don't know,
true. So true.
If you don't know it by then, like, you can't learn it overnight. And especially like when, like, reading Ed Miller books on the plane ride to the WSOP, it's like really interesting, heady concepts that, like, actually kind of fuck up your game until you get practice with them. And so I found that, like, when I would do that, I'd be, like, thinking about hands, but, like, with theory, but not with enough practice with that theory, and kind of make some mistakes because of it. And
yeah, it's like implementing a new strategy, like, yeah, taking a new strategy and implementing it day one, which I've struggled with as well in the past.
Yeah, you got to, like, get your reps in at, like, lower stakes and, you know, in your regular game, and then you can start, you know, integrating that into, like, that. Then that becomes part of your instinct, right?
Absolutely. Yeah, you don't want to try something out in the main event.
Yeah, like, yeah, yeah. And not you know, like, not that I was intending to do that, but, like, my mind would get a little, like, in overdrive because of this. So I just took some time off, and I came out, you know, without doing much previous couple, 2-3 weeks before, and I felt great, and it was nice to cash. So I came out for a week. I played I think the WSOP had a great schedule for Rex, who wanted to come out for a week at a time, especially the week I came out, because every day there was a 1K or 1.5K for 6 days, which was awesome. So the first tournament I played was the DraftKings 50-50, where half the field cashed, which
is a great tournament to start with. Like,
God,
so smart! Like,
it was a 100%, right? Like, let's start with this thing. There's a high probability that I'll cash, and I did, and I actually made it to. I finished 187th, and you know, out of 2,200, so I actually moved to the next level up. You know, I didn't even get the min cash; I got the next level, and made
bragger.
It pretty close to what a normal cash. What's that?
I said bragger.
Yeah. Yeah, not even a min cash. Like, you loser.
Shots fired.
And I busted the last hand of the day, of day one. This is not a strat hand, but last hand of day one, there was a min raise from, like, under the gun, and then I think, four callers by the time it got to me in the big blind, and I had Queen Jack. I think it was off, and you know, it's a no-brainer to put in, you know, whatever. It was like 500, 1,000, so it was a no-brainer to put in. He made a 2K, no-brainer to put the 1,000 for how much was in there. And the flop is Queen 3, so I'm like, shit, awesome. I check, it folds around to someone who bets. I raise, he ships, and he has King Queen.
What was the flop? I don't want to get in the strategy.
No, that was Queen. It was Queen three, and I was 28 big blinds deep, by the way. So
I like the shove. Okay, cool.
Yeah, yeah. I wasn't like I was like, you know, 96 big blinds deep. And so I busted on the last hand of the night, unfortunately. But you know what? Like, great start to the series. Got a cash under my belt. Felt like I played well all day and, you know, was optimistic going to the rest of it. The next day was the 1K, didn't cash in that. And then the 1.5K on Monday, which I made day two with a short stack. I think at 16K going into 600, 1200. But I was able to grind it out. So we came to day two with, I think, 284 people. No, 364 people. It paid 243, and I was able to grind it out, get myself up to about 40K at maybe like 45K at 45K at 800, 1600, and then I ran kings into ace, queen, ace on the river. I still had a couple chips left over, and the next hand I jammed fours into king, jack, a king on the river, and that was it. And I busted 20 from the money. So it was kind of disappointing, but like, hey, you know, 2 days later I'm back at a day two, playing well, I felt, feeling like...
And you can't be mad in those situations either. Like, king's ace, queen is kind of a cooler on both parts. I'm guessing the stacks were short enough. So, like, you get your money in a really good spot there, and then you flip...
Yeah.
It's kind of, you know, you're just like, okay, sweet, played well, next one, let's go.
Exactly, that was the mindset. I mean, it would have been nice to cash being 20 from the money, right? Like,
if you win that hand, you're going to do more than cash, I think.
Well, if I win that hand, I have, I think, 80-something K at 800, 1600, right? So now we're set up for a run. So, you know, but like you said, you know, that's the mindset you need, because I felt good. I was like, I was set up for a run. Like, if that hand would have just held, I would have been set up for a run, and now we could have gone far. And so while it hurt not to cash, you know what? There's three more tournaments left. Let's, you know, we can do something in another one. And so the next tournaments were the one drop. I played Flight A, Flight B. No, two bullets in Flight B. Neither one went anywhere. And then I made a deep run in the Bounty. I finished 90th. And I have hands from that for us to talk about. But that was an awesome tournament. It was the last tournament I played. And I basically busted like 10 minutes before dinner and then got on a plane and went home. so I owe you guys our swaps, still. but that was,
paid
that,
me.
I paid you, but I haven't paid KB yet.
Ooh.
We still have to figure out. Swap so many different things. Like, we have to like go through the list and say, okay, what? Which ones have I paid you for? Which ones haven't I paid you for?
My side's easy.
Yeah. Oh yeah. 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 That's right. Yeah. You need. I mean, how much money do I have to ship to you? Basically, we have to figure out since you didn't.
Thousands.
Yeah. Because I don't think I've ever seen you cash in a tournament.
Ooh, okay. Oh, okay. Wow. All right.
Shots fired.
One thing I want to say, though, Diego, about you, and I think KB will back me on this, I don't think there's a person more excited about when they show up to the World Series that plays in any event that's out there playing. I don't think anyone's more – like, when you come out, like, the smile on your face is, like, priceless.
Yeah.
Like, you are so pumped to be there. And, like, it kind of gives me, like, a little second wind because usually I'm already out there, like.
Yeah, right.
You come out, and I'm just like, oh, my God, Diego's, like, so juiced to be here. This is sick.
I am. I mean, think about it. I've been sitting at home following the results for 4 weeks, right, watching the Tuchman broadcasts, like, thinking about, all right, well, 4 weeks away.
Which that alone will make you want to commit suicide.
I disagree. I love.
We've already had this argument, Diego. Okay. I mean, you know what? I think he's really good for the game. That's a whole nother.
Yeah, no, I am pumped to come out. It's absolutely like it's a week full of poker. It's when you bust out, we go to PT's pub and we play shuffleboard and have some beers, talk poker for a week. Like, you know, like I said, since it's not what I do every day, it is like a nice break for me and a vacation. So I look forward to it, and it's exciting. And having a good series also helped a lot, helped the spirit a lot, because it was nice cash a couple times.
One thing I can say for sure is you obviously worked on your poker game a lot over the year, but you did not work at all on your shuffleboard game, because you are the most
at
shuffleboard.
Yeah, I'll second that. You were the shits.
Yeah, but I won the game for us.
That's the other thing. KB, do you remember when he won, and he's like, Mark, did you see my shot? Did you see my shot? I'm like, are you six?
All I know is that I won games. Yeah. Like, I actually won the game.
I didn't play you this year.
No, you didn't.
There was one night that me and Diego went, and he actually, in fairness, not to spoil the ending, but he did win the next match. But the first match went 15-0, 15-0. I beat up two straight games.
Oh, shit.
And I was just like, whoa, what happened? He was like throwing it off the side.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you know, I don't. I just don't bust out of tournaments early enough to go practice like you do. So.
Oh, that's a fair argument, actually.
All right.
Yeah, so I did get more shuffleboard experience this summer than I would have liked to.
Yeah, but it's fun doing that, going back. So, you know, that was my summer. It was awesome to make a couple deep runs. Shout out to the TPE crew, members, people who follow us on Twitter, because, you know, just even a deep run to day two, the love and the retweets and just the encouragement from people was just awesome. Like, I could just imagine a super deep run, because this is just a 90th. This is, you know, this is a nice run. But imagine a day three mark like you did.
Oh,
like,
I mean, and I told Derek on the podcast, I get a little emotional. I can't believe, like, all the TV members that are tweeting at me, direct messaging me, texting me. It's pretty incredible, and it makes, like, that's why I love TV so much. We're just, like, a strong family, like. So, yeah, shout out to all you guys. Appreciate it. Ladies, too. Love it.
Yep.
It's amazing.
It gets better every year, too. Like, every year more people, like, stop you in the hallway or are at your table and are like, hey, I think I know you. And that's pretty cool. And it's worth mentioning very quickly, too. Like, we mentioned it on the TPE Live podcast, but the all the guys who came out to the TPE meetup this year, it was awesome to meet all those folks. Great turnout and awesome people, and I feel like we have to hang with members more this year than any year before, and that was pretty rewarding, I thought.
It's the beauty of actually staying a block away from the real. We can just go like, hey, meet us at PT's pub, and we would go down there, and, you know, sometimes it would be two people, and, like, no matter who can, it was just a blast. I mean, you get to talk to people that are passionate about the same game we are, so it's awesome.
It really is, and as Mark said earlier, if you are, you know, if you just love poker and you have some sort of goal or dream to come out to WSOP, like, I know all the regs who are over it are probably, like, rolling their eyes at this point about this, but
I'm ready to go back now.
but serious, like, if it's something that you, like, have on your bucket list or you want to do, like, just, you got to do it. And if you're a TPE member, like, just come look us up and hang. Like, that's how Carlos got in the mix with us, right? Like, he's like, I'm a fan. I'm a friend. TPE. And he rolls with the crew, right? Like just come do it. Like,
we announce in the forums, like, 6 months in. Like, we give people 6 months, and we'll give you the date. We do the party. If you can't make it out there, like you were saying, Diego, we're still around there. We're still gonna hang out. But the meetup is amazing.
And that's what TPE was really found on. Like, so I'm like, ultra serious. I mean it. Like, come out. Let us know. We'll meet up with you. We'll hang out on a break, whatever. Derek and I started TPE because we're 30-something-year-old guys who love poker and didn't really know a lot of people in our day-to-day life that liked poker. And so we built TPE because we felt like there were a lot of people who probably in the same situation as us. And that, from the beginning, that was, like, a real feature of TPE, is that we wanted to bring members together. So 100%, like, come out. Give us a call, whatever. Text us. I don't know. Just tweet at us, and we'll meet up. We love it.
If you're going to play shuffleboard for money, just play Diego.
Yeah, put it this way. If you don't know where to go at, like, 1 a.m., if you want to meet up with us, just come to PT's at 1 a.m.
It's on Decatur.
On Decatur, yeah. PT's on Decatur at, like, 1 a.m. at any given night. if you come out three nights in a row, I guarantee you someone from TPE will be there playing shuffleboard. If you have a hard time finding someone, and we will bring you to the family.
Especially if you see someone bust out, it's usually like home PTs.
Yeah, home to drop your stuff, round up some people, and then go to PTs.
Yeah.
Yeah. Cool. Alrighty, well, why don't we go ahead and move on to the WSOP? Let's talk about the main event.
So there's a million things we could obviously talk about with regards to the main event, but where should we start?
Let's start with the coverage of it, the whole, you know, the way that the WSOP covers it, the restriction ESPN puts on it, and
no poker news this year.
No poker news.
Yeah.
Blog updates 10 minutes, 20 minutes after a hand goes out. Like, I'm legit frustrated with it all, given the fact that we spend all summer getting to see final tables in live stream, which is awesome, and regardless of how you feel about Tuchman, I think he's awesome for the game. But
we
then
joke
we
about Tuchman. I think KB and I both really respect what he does. Like, he's
I mean, I like how he plays the role of amateur, and he poses questions to pros. Like, I mean, I feel like that's what he's doing, and I think that he gets a lot out of the pros. Like, so I
agree. It's sort of like a running joke in the house. I don't even really know how it ever started, because it's not like he does a bad job or anything. It's just kind of something.
Not at all. I think we're all very thankful for what he does. It's just a running joke.
So you go 6 weeks with, a final table nearly every night, a stream every night, and then you get to the biggest event of the summer, and all you can do is follow on Twitter and in the podcast, and I mean in the blog. And I understand why it's this way. I'm assuming
money.
I'm assuming ESPN puts the kibosh on the live stream because their experiment in 2011. Resulted in data that told them that they lost viewers for their Tuesday night show because of the live stream. I think that's pretty universally accepted, right?
Yeah, I assume that's the case.
Okay.
I kind of get it. Like, as a company that provides content, I get that you don't want other sources of your content getting out there. But I don't understand the lack of updates, the lack of accurate chip counts, Like, to me, that should be such a simple fix.
Well, I think WSOP doesn't really – they kind of don't – like, I think
care.
I think they just – they don't – they're not, like, that innovative, right? And they probably just didn't know what to do, and the public has filled in with Twitter, right? Like, so for those of you who weren't following Day 7, like, it was amazing on Twitter.
It was fun.
It was fun. Like,
I was having a good time.
I was having a good time on Twitter. Like, Brian Balsbog, Negreanu's agent, was live tweeting every Negreanu hand. And then Jesse Martin was also live tweeting.
Mazer Bowie on Twitter.
Mazer Bowie.
Remco Media, shout out, was awesome.
Remco Media, right.
Yeah, he was doing a great job. That's who I was most following.
Those are the big four, I think, that were really keeping everyone up to date. And they were doing a fantastic job. And I think, like, I wouldn't be surprised if WSOP doesn't learn from this and implement something last year. Not that, like, I think that they're super smart or I'm giving them any props, but, like, it was so apparent how it should, like, how you can make it better. And I think it still could be a ton better, but I think you got to get more real time and, you know, either do stuff on Twitter or even Twitch. Like, you can go on Twitch and, like, just, like, put up a hand replayer of some sort and kind of just fill in what the hands are at the time or stacks or whatever, kind of, like, to show in real time what's happening. But what I think the real solution – so here's ESPN. I'm going to give you my free advice, and I don't think this is going to be groundbreaking but to anyone what I think they should do, but I think I can give them a good rationale to do it. So they should do live streaming for the serious people – and charge for it, because I would pay $19.99, $29.99 for coverage of the World Series from day whatever three on day one, even if you do day one, just a feature table, whatever it is, like, I would pay for that. It would be something I'd love to spend 8 hours doing every day for the duration of the main event once I'm busted if I play it next year. So, I mean, do you guys agree? Would you pay for coverage? Huffman type coverage?
Yeah, for sure. In fact, I don't remember what I paid, but I paid for the pay-per-view when they did pay-per-view.
So did I.
Yang year, I think?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. And I'm assuming it was like probably $39 or $49 or something like that. I would do that again in a second.
And it sucked back then. They didn't really know how to do it. Like, they didn't have – I don't think they had hold cards. There was commentary.
Yeah, I think there was commentary, but no hold cards.
There were no hold cards.
It's weird to have the hold cards because, especially since they put the main event, the November 9 month down, it would be tough to – I don't know. It could be – if I was playing in it and they showed all the hole cards when we were 18-handed, I don't know how I'd feel.
You know
about
what?
That, but they can do that if they want, you know?
No, you bring up a good point, though. Like, I don't mind them not showing the hole cards. Like, for this particular event, just to be, like, because it's less about, like, the actual cards and the strategy, and it's more about the pomp and circumstance of it all, just being, getting to experience it. So I'm fine with even that. So and they could really – so my suggestion is, like, you know, the problem is they don't want to cannibalize their Tuesday night show. So I say create two completely different products here. Like, go hardcore overboard for the poker fanatics in that show. Like, make it a strategy. Make it a strategy stream. Make it like some of the people who are watching it love poker and they want to talk.
The people that watch the live stream are usually like – their life is either not – I don't want to say it's all poker, but, like, a good chunk of their life is poker.
Yeah. They're happy when they're in poker mode.
Yeah.
You know, like, it's like, so important to them. So go, like separate and segment the two products. Make that stream all about the hardcore fan. Promote the shit out of it in the live streams that you do for free all summer long. Put it all over WSOP.com, like, really promote it and make money off of it. We'll pay, right? You're not monetizing it. But then go the complete opposite direction in the Tuesday night show and make that shit a story. Get the characters. I mean, obviously you're gonna cover the poker, and, you know, it's at heart a poker tournament. But, like, go back to the 2003, 4, 5, 6. Like, talk about the people more. Go the opposite direction, because the people who are watching that, like, the vast majority, don't want to get deep in the strategy.
Yeah, they want to know who Joe Schmo is.
They want to follow the big pros, and they want the guy. They want the Darvin Moon. They want the Rain Khan, right? Who was his? Havad?
Havad Khan.
They want the Jamie Golds. They want the
Havad, you shouldn't put him in the same sentence. He was, like, a ridiculously good online player as well.
But he was
a great story. You're right.
I was talking about his story. I only put him in that category. For his antics. His entertainment value. Like, go full-on entertainment in the Tuesday night show. I think you'll get more viewers. More people will be interested in it because it'll be entertainment, and you will cater to the pros and create two different products. That's my suggestion. They dropped the ball on this.
Oh, I think they dropped the ball in something else. I think they made a massive mistake when they got down the – I think it was 12 or 13 handed. And this is an ESPN. I think it's just the World Series. They had one table with the chip leader who had, like, around $50 million, and then he had all short stacks. And they played, I think it was within 40 – I forget how long it was time-wise, but they didn't have hand for hand, I think, when it was 12-handed. I think they – whatever, Jack Eppel tweeted that they changed it after a break. Yeah. But one table had played 110 hands, and the other had played 70 because there was stalling.
Yeah, yeah.
And Stealth Amazing. Monk, who went deep, who's going to be a great character I played with him in one throw. He was amazing. He's really, really good. Really interesting guy, too. But he said, like, he mentioned the payouts, and he mentioned they needed to go hand for hand earlier, and sure enough, he was right. I mean, that's pretty bad. And then, so they realized the mistake. I think Negreanu, I mean, rumor has it, Negreanu said something to the floor because he was on the table that had seen 110 hands versus the 70 hands, which is a massive disadvantage if you're a short stack.
Right.
And so they started going hand for hand. which ends up screwing the chip leader. So in-game, not just in a normal tournament, in the main event, we're changing up what's going on because maybe Negreanu said something. And Negreanu, let's face it, he has a lot of pull. Like, he's a well-known face in the poker community. He knows all the floor men. And I'm not 100% sure on this. It's all what I've heard.
Yeah, but was this a written commitment and rule that they weren't supposed to be going hand for hand? Like, I think everyone was surprised that they weren't going hand for hand. Like, is there a
it should have been a rule?
Like, is this in the rule book somewhere? Like, you go hand for hand.
I think if there's noticeable stalling, they're supposed to go hand for hand. But it's the stupidest rule ever. Like, just go hand for hand.
Yeah,
it makes no sense. And then stop the clock too.
Well, it's manageable. Like, when you get down to two tables, when you get down to two or three tables. Like, you could go hand for hand and just
the whole time you could go hand for hand.
Right. Because you're not going to get that much disparity.
And you pause the clock, too. Like, let it take. I mean, then you got to worry about time. I get it. Like, maybe just do it 15-handed, 12-handed. But for one table to play 40 more hands when there's 15 left, that's.
Yeah. Oh, that's crazy.
That's crazy. Yeah. And then for them to change it in-game is like I don't know if that's the right call. I don't know what the right call is there. I'm happy I'm not in that position.
I think changing it is okay because you're righting a wrong and you're not changing the rule. Like you're just finally getting the rule right.
But I mean, are you not changing? You are changing.
You're not changing the rule. You're because it's not explicitly stated that hand for hand is going to be at.
Well, that's why it should be like you. But I mean, you're changing the outcome of the tournament because of this. Like you're having an.
Yeah. I agree.
They just got to look at it in advance and go, okay, where are the inflection points in the pay jumps where there's going to be massive stalling?
Yeah.
Apparently, one guy was literally getting the clock called on like every other hand. And this was earlier, like. I think even like 18 hand or 16.
You're talking hundreds of thousands of dollars, and you have one table with a chip leader and then four shorties. And then the other table was much more balanced.
And I guess the other table, no one was calling the clock on them because it was to their advantage? Or are they pissed off? I don't know what the.
No, they. I knew they were calling the clock before. I'm not sure they were calling the clock now. Some of the guys with chips maybe were, but like. If you're at that other table, like, and you know the situation on the other table, I'm just sitting there tanking too. I mean, I like money too much not to tank there and just, like, call the clock on me. I'll wait a minute. I mean, 40 hands is absurd when you're playing for – I mean, you're talking hundreds to $1 million. Like, there's massive jumps.
So why didn't people on the other table start stalling and then force the issue?
I think if you're a short stack, you don't really want to stall because – You know, I don't know. I guess I look at it differently. If I'm a short stack, I want to see as many hands as possible. But I think that's my ICM spot like that.
Yeah.
You know?
That's my inclination, too. Is like I kind of actually want to see hands.
But you're also more likely to bust.
Yeah, right.
So like, when you're dealing with hundreds – I mean, it's just something that, like, people were talking about, like, you know, days before, weeks before, months before. It should have been taken care of. And, you know, like I said earlier – The World Series does a great job for the most part, but like in the main event, we have to be very careful. We're talking about like life-changing money.
Yeah. Well, let's see if they fix it next year. I mean, it's clearly
100%. There's no way they don't because and thank God I'm happy he stepped in. Jack Effel stepped in and said we're going to go hand for hand. But you kind of changed the tournament now. Like you should have just done it before. But I guess like. I don't know. I'm torn. Like, do we really want him to do that in-game, or should they just play it out as it was going? It's weird. I don't know. That was a big argument on Twitter, actually.
Yeah.
One of the other things that I saw being mentioned on Twitter two nights ago? I forget when all this happened now. Two nights ago, right? With regards to when they were down to two tables, was the announcer... Like, potentially influencing action? Did you guys see
I saw that, too. He was, like, commenting on, like, Joe races again, and no one calls. Like, he was, like...
Yeah, he'd be like, surprise, Joe races again.
So
stuff
bad.
Like that.
So bad.
It's really, really bad. Like, and somebody pointed to one hand, and I actually wasn't clear if this was in the main event or if it was in another tournament, but they pointed to a time where it was like somebody opened and somebody else shoved and they were like, you know, Joe Smith goes all in for not very much more, or something like that.
I remember that.
It's like, you can't say stuff
and
like
I've
that.
Had a dealer say that at the table, too, and like I was just like, this is unbelievable. Like,
that's crazy. Now, I will say that I'm going to guess that no one at that table was really affected by, like, they know Joe is crushing the table and opening every hand, but it's just inappropriate. It's still inappropriate, but I don't think it actually changed anything.
And I agree with you to some extent, but, like, just how we react and how our brains work, if we hear that in our head, it may sit there, like, raises again. It's like, fuck this guy, I'm all in. Like, have an impact. Like, subconsciously, it could have...
Well, it's a non-zero.
Right.
It's a non-zero impact, right? Like, it could only have a negative impact.
Yeah.
Like, it could only have an impact that is inappropriate, basically, is what I'm saying.
It's
I get it, they're trying to make it entertaining and stuff, but the nature of the game is that the announcing basically needs to be, you know, Steve raises to 100,000.
No change in voice.
Joe calls.
Yep.
Yeah, like it needs to be like golf announcer.
And if there is
ever
a time where it needs to be perfect, it's the main event with 15 to go because, again, life-changing money, you know.
Yeah.
But for the most part, they do a great job. We're just picking out the negatives.
Yeah.
We could talk about the good stuff, but nobody wants to hear that bullshit.
All right, so let's talk about the play, the action, what went down. So you both played it. Right, and we don't have to go deep into it.
I don't know, did we? I mean, I had fun in it.
You were there for a little while, right, both of you? Derek, you made day two, right?
No,
I did not. Sick burn. I actually was not intending to do that. I thought you did make it to day two.
No, and it's not... I mean, it's not hard to break to bust on day one. Like, after I busted, people were like, hey, this guy busted on day one, too, and this guy did, too. And I was like, okay, I don't feel so bad. But
I've done it three times, so I know exactly
how
you feel. People that say it, like... Someone said at our house, they're like, how do you not make day two? And it's like, well, coolers happen.
Get like, set under set. And
I mean,
go
there's
home.
Stuff that happens. Like, it's pretty, like, normal for people to bust day one. Like, coolers happen. Yeah.
I mean, I was down to 20K first level because I ran kings and aces and didn't go broke.
Blind versus blind.
Yeah, five-handed. We hadn't even filled the table in yet.
Wow. Wow. Well, you shouldn't. I mean, obviously, I think it's right. You're not going broke there, but. But
yeah,
you lose easily losing 10K.
Minimal 10K. He could have lost more, too.
Right.
Five-handed and make, like, kings becomes aces, and aces become jokers. Like,
right.
The hand strengths are up when we're five-handed, especially blind versus blind. Very lucky. And you seemed cool, actually, on your Twitter. You didn't seem frustrated.
No, yeah, because we kept joking about how, like, you can lose a hand like that, and then you just have to remind yourself that you still have 200 big blinds.
Yeah.
Like, it's absurd. Now, granted, you know, 6 hours later, you've maybe lost a few more pots, and you're down to, like, 18, and now you only got 60 bigs, and now it starts to get a little more pressure. But at that point, I was like, it is what it is.
Yeah, absolutely.
I think I remember talking to somebody about this, and I don't remember who it was, but I remember it was at the Thinking Poker meetup, and somebody was talking about, like, losing a lot of chips right away in the main event. And I remember saying something like, I just pretend like that's what I started with.
Yeah,
yeah, you play your stack for what it is.
I mean, it's all going to be about how you mentally handle it, and you have to do whatever it takes, frame it in the way that it doesn't feel like, you know, you've lost something. I mean, that's just we're hardwired to, like, feel worse about what we lost than feel good about what we won. Like, that's just normal.
Yeah,
like,
right.
If you get up to, like... 84K, you know, by level two, and then you're down to like 63. You're like, fuck, I had 84K.
Right.
Like, oh, let's stack it.
Yeah.
You know, but like that's just wrong. Like that's wrong. Like and the one, I just heard this, and the thing that I'll take with me for the next time I play it, if I get short, is I think Stealth Monk had 9K at the end of day two. At the end of day two, and he actually, from what I hear, sold pieces at face value at that point.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. I can't confirm it. That's what I heard. I heard that on the 2+2 podcast as I was sitting at the driver.
Interesting.
Earlier. But, you know, he finished 14th or whatever and, you know, at one point had, what, 14 million chips or something? Like, he had 9.9K at the end of day two. Like, and that's still, what are you going to day three with? What are you going to day three?
Must be
you had 2, 4,
6, 12.
Wait,
right.
That's when you end day two, you're saying?
Yeah. And I may have it off, and it may be even maybe day one, but even if it's day one, like, people are like, I'm going into day two with only 9K. I mean, if it's day one, you're going to day two with what, like 19 bigs? Like, that's just a double for being comfortable. Anyway, like, I think this is a pretty common refrain. Like, I think we talk about it every year.
It does remind me of a conversation that Ryan Van Sanford and I had, which was, if you busted on day one, how much would you pay to get back in the tournament on day two with 10,000 chips?
Right. Exactly.
And it was a pretty interesting conversation. I'm sure there's a math answer to the question, but we never did the math.
Yeah. Well, let's do that homework for the next podcast. All right, so we guys played. The turnout was pretty close to last year, 6,400 or so. I think they got 65, something like that. It was down like 3%, 4%.
I actually thought it would be up a little this year. I was surprised.
Yeah, not bad.
It definitely wasn't bad, but I was like, I would have bet a lot of money that it would be up at least, you know, a little, like 1% or 2%. But
yeah, I think poker is on a whole declining. It's not surprised that it declined a little bit. I think as long as we're staying close, like until there are outside factors that drive, you know, another boom. And by the way, I don't think Negreanu making the final table would have driven a boom, but we can talk about that later.
I do.
All right, let's talk about that now. State your case, Mr. AZN All In.
I just think Negreanu's personality and him being around forever would have helped the game a lot. I think, like, I don't want to say poker's dead. I don't believe that. I jokingly tweeted that. But him making the final table is pretty big for all of us. He's, like, big right now in getting California legalized, possibly Stars, I'm guessing. He does a lot for the game, and I'm actually not a big Negreanu fan for whatever reason. I don't really know. But, like, for what he does for the game, he's amazing. Like, he's been around a long time. Everyone knows who he is that's in poker. Big face. He's got a pretty outgoing personality, if you, like, compare him to Ivy or any of the other big names you think about. He's kind of perfect. And I know you're not going to argue that.
I'm not going to argue any of that. What I'm going to argue is that the infrastructure, sort of the ecosystem around poker is too damaged to allow a huge boom for something like him.
I don't think it would be a moneymaker boom. I'm not saying that, but my mom knows who Negreanu is, and that's the only one she knows, only player she knows.
But it still is.
She will stop watching when he
goes. Yes, but still impossible for her to deposit online. It's impossible for her to play and practice. All the factors that have kept poker from, you know, at the very best staying, have kept poker at the best staying stagnant, at the worst declining a little, are still there. And so, like, I compare it to, like, if Negreanu made the final table, it's like a player running as good as they can in their expectation, right? But, like, not rising to a new level, if you get what I mean. Like, you know, if someone's ROI is, like, true ROI is 10%, and, like, they ran at, like, 25 or 30%, like, that's how I feel like Negreanu. He would have been the best possible in the band that we could have with this infrastructure, but he wouldn't have changed the infrastructure so that we are at a new level, is how I feel about him making the final table. Did that make any sense?
It does.
I'm just
coming
for rebuttal. Go ahead.
All right, go.
All right, I'll give you my opinion, and I think I might be somewhat where Mark is. So, like, I think – well, actually, I'm probably right between you guys. So – I think Negreanu making the final table would have been really good for poker. It wouldn't have been a boom, but it would have been pretty big, because I think one of the things I thought of was, you know, the last few years, like the first year they did the November 9, you saw, like, guys going on Letterman and stuff, and like big press opportunities for poker. And that hasn't happened the last few years. You know, occasionally the winner, like Ryan Reese, will be on ESPN or whatever. But he's obviously on ESPN because they air the World Series. But, I mean, he'll be on, like, you know, Sunday football show or something. But you don't see, like, the mainstream press opportunities for the November 9 anymore. But if Negreanu had made the November 9, he could have gotten on Kimmel or
Saturday Night Live, everything.
But what is the impact of that going to be? How many people do you think are going to go play the main event because of that? Like,
well, it might not make people go play the main event, but it might make people go, you know what, I'm going to go start playing in my local bar league or at in Atlantic City for this $300 tournament they run. Yeah. Or I'm going to –
Oh, wait,
and don't get me wrong. I'm not saying it would be a boom. I'm just saying it would absolutely help the game.
How much would you pay for a TPE Pro to go on Jimmy Kimmel, Diego?
How much would I pay to have a TPE? Well, I mean, I could
probably – whatever.
I'd have to look at the numbers.
Question.
Like,
it doesn't matter. Like, I don't need an answer. I'm just saying it would that's be, big.
It's clearly worth money, but we're also saying, okay, how many people – like, it's apples and oranges because that's not – we say, okay, how many viewers do they have? How many would potentially look up TPE? How many – then conversion rate, how many would sign up? Like, I can quantify that, and the price point is $30 a month. Like, it's a completely different – and you could do it from your home.
Yeah, but the point is the amount of exposure Negreanu would get going on 55 talk shows.
Yes.
Like, he would go on every talk show. It would be amazing for
poker. His exposure cannot – will not lead to an outcome because the plumbing is broken. Like, people can't deposit.
You're just speaking online, then. You're just speaking online.
It's all interconnected. It starts with online. Like, if they see – if someone sees – if we had fully regulated poker and someone sees Negreanu on there and they're like, oh, this guy's likable. He's fun. Oh, November 9. I that's so cool. I want to do that. Let me go throw $50 on PokerStars and go play. You know, like, that would have an impact. Like, yes, that would have an impact. But today you're saying people are going to then, like go out and drive – like, they have to go take time off from work and go drive to play in a tournament. Like, the infrastructure – like, live poker is only booming because there's – well, I don't know. I guess it's booming or it's doing well because online's not there. But, like, it's with the people who most likely would have been playing online. Like – It's not a lot of new people, and that's what we need for another boom is a whole fresh new crowd of people coming to play and like a lot of that. So people like the people who end up going broke are okay. It's okay. It's made up for by new people coming in every time, and you just don't have that influx.
I'm just not sure like that many people like back in the day watched the main event and signed up online. Like, sure, it happens, but like I don't think it's a massive.
I mean, dude, party poker advertisements were like nonstop. Like FTP advertisements nonstop. Yeah, that means that they were working. Like they're not buying airtime if it's not leading to signups. So they
But here's an interesting thing. Here's an interesting thing. And now granted, we're in a different time, like a way more technologically advanced time than when Moneymaker happened. But if you listen to the stories of people who started in poker because of Moneymaker, very few of them say, oh, yeah, I saw Moneymaker, and then I deposited money on Stars and started playing. Most of them say, yeah, I was part of the Moneymaker boom. I started with sit-and-goes in my dorm room with my buddies, and we would play home games, and then eventually I deposited.
Home game is the first thing you hear usually.
Yes, almost always.
And then and without online, it dies at home game. It's basically
I'll
agree there. Like, it's a way better chance with online, for sure. Because
then
you
guys
need satellites and stuff like that. Absolutely.
Yeah. Don't get me wrong. I think it would have a positive impact, but I just don't think it would be some huge boom. I think it would be like a little bump, and that's about it.
I guess like we're probably in between because I think it would be a pretty big bump, but not a boom. And you think it'd be a little
boom,
bump, and Mark thinks it might be closer to boom.
No, I don't think if we're saying what Moneymaker did was a boom, I don't think it could be even half of that. But I still think it would be amazing for poker.
All right, let's put some numbers on it. Let's quantify.
If he wins it, I think we get like 1,500 more people that play.
Well, I was going to say let's throw our – obviously this is all hearsay because he didn't make it, but like – we had 6,420. Is that the number this year? Something like that, right? So let's say 6,400 people played the main event. Like if he made the main, if he made the final table, it'd be like 68, 69, and within 3 years back to 64 is my opinion. If he won it, it'd be like 71, 72, and also once again within 2 years.
I think much higher than that.
Okay, what's your numbers?
Go ahead, Derek.
I wasn't really thinking of it in terms of like how it would affect the main event.
Well,
I was thinking of it just
that's the only way you could like that's the way. That's the bellwether of it all.
See, I don't know because like the next year the people who just got into poker, it's not like they're going to be like, oh, I got into poker because of this Negreanu guy. Now I'm going to play the main event next year. Like, it would take a couple years for
well,
them to build.
I think it would get good. I disagree. I think that, as I've been doing the whole time, I think the only, like, what it would do, it would get the people who, like missed it or kind of liked it back into it and maybe take it another shot next year. Like, I think that's
Yeah, I guess that's true.
Impact, you know?
I mean, yeah, I'm probably somewhere around where you are, like maybe a little more optimistic, like maybe we crack 7,200 or something the year after, and then, but it would probably, well, without any change in the legal landscape of online poker, it would probably flow back down again.
Right, because then I want to do this with the change in the legal landscape.
Well, I mean, that's already assumed that, like, something, I mean, probably one or more states will be technically legal by next year, maybe not, hopefully California, please.
Right.
I think closer to 8,000. I think he can have that big of an impact because Stars will put a shit ton of money into him, and he'll travel all over Europe, and he's already a big face winning the main event. Like, I could see, like, it's still – that's a lot of money, though, for the World Series. But, yeah, I think it could have a really, really big impact. I don't like using the main event either. I like using the whole dub sop.
That one's tough because they change it every year and they add new events.
Yeah, different events.
Yeah.
I mean, honestly, the thing that I was probably most excited about with the potential of, like, my vision when Negreanu won was not so much, wow, so many more people are going to play poker. It was more, wow, when he goes to talk to legislators, he'll have such a great argument that skill, that poker's a skill game.
Exactly what,
like,
I thought.
Look at me. I'm considered one of the greatest poker players in the world, and I just beat 7,200 people. Clearly, it's not luck. It's a skill game.
He can still say that. I already thought about this.
He can still say that. Yeah, he can.
But it's such a sweeter case if he wins.
But as the winner, and you know, politicians are people, too. They want to meet the guy who won the main event. They want to get a picture with him. They want to shake his hand. They want an autograph, you know?
Dude, it is so perfect because he's pushing for California. Him and Somerville went and met with senators, congressmen, whatever. And, like, this is, like, perfect, like, wasn't having
yeah.
We were just talking about him, Derek. We're like, where's Negreanu been? Hasn't done much.
I know.
Here he is.
And the question is, you know, if McKeon wins, I'm sure he's a great guy. I don't know him. Like, is he going to go fight for online poker and be like, I won the main event. I'm here to say we need to legalize online poker.
Invest
you know,
in
like,
sweatpants because he'll probably get a deal with some guy wears sweatpants everywhere he goes.
I'll go on record and say I don't think it would make lick of difference on regulating poker if Negreanu won. This is a political game. This is a money-driven game. It has nothing to do with
in California.
The skill story.
Other states, yes. California, I don't know.
The skill story is not at all the driver. It is all about corporations, money, and the people who think it's evil.
I think it would have a non-zero impact on the legalization.
Point
so
zero,
take
zero,
that.
Zero, 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 zero. Okay, I'm 0.00001.
Now here's the other point that I wanted to make about a potential poker boom. I was rooting for one person more than any other person in the entire field with 30 or so left.
Kelly Minkin,
and it's not even close. I would have happily had Daniel Negreanu bust 30th if Kelly Minkin would win.
I think I agree with you on that, and I still think it's the same, maybe a little more impact potentially.
I think it could. That's the one thing that could have been a boom. I think.
You know what might actually be a boom is if Pierre Nouvel or whatever his name is, the 72-year-old wins because
get
the old guys in. Like, seriously.
The old guys aren't going anywhere. Look at the seniors event. I mean, that shit is fucking. You can't even.
Yeah, but more of them. There's a lot of them. There's a lot more.
Yeah, for sure.
You know, he's inspiring. But I agree with you, KB. Kelly would have been a great story, and I think, like, I actually don't know anything about her, but I take that back. I don't know her, but looking at her, like, just reading about her, she's got like a molecular biology degree or something. She's a lawyer. Like, she's probably very well spoken. Like, she would have been a good ambassador if she made it.
Yeah,
or won it. You know.
So are we saying that we need to root for Pierre? He's our best person to root for now? Like, not from, like, a personal standpoint, but from, like, a poker...
No, Max Steinberg, business. It's not even close.
No, well, I think Max Steinberg is the one I would be rooting for to win because I think he's a great player, but I think Pierre is the one to root for the best for poker, quote unquote?
I don't know. Steinberg's kind of a face. I think he would travel, and I think he would be a good ambassador of the game. I'm not sure anyone else would be.
No, you don't. No one's going to want to play against a guy like he's like a super technical. Like he's got a good personality. He's well spoken, but he's a fucking professional poker player. Like
he's not. He's a professional DFS grinder.
Okay, but he.
Is he? I didn't know that.
Yeah. Like, he's the guy who, when he starts talking poker, like the home game guys, their eyes glaze over. Like, like he's too technical. Like he's too good.
That's
like,
true. But it'd be cool to look at like the percentage of players that are like on that technical, like mostly the online guys that play in the main event, because I'm guessing it's probably more than your average Joe.
Yeah, but to explode it, you got to get the average Joe back out there. So you need an average Joe to win it, to have any positive impact. I think he actually would be bad for the game.
They're like, oh my God, this guy's too smart. What a nerd.
Yeah, seriously.
Well, you may be right.
You get people who go, God, the last few years it's been like P.S. Hines and like all these sickos, like young online sickos.
Yep. I think he'd actually be bad. Although, like I said, I think I would most like him. Like, I am rooting for him to win because I, once again, getting back to WSOP broadcast, I really enjoy when he's on there. I think he's like really entertaining and
he's amazing,
like, great to listen to. So I'm rooting for him in that respect. But I do think he's actually the worst one.
I wanted Fedor to win just for like. I don't think he would have been great for poker, but I think Fedor is an amazing story. Just like. 21 and wins everything. I was rooting for him 30, but yeah, impact wise, I think Negreanu's won. I think a lady winning it would have been great too.
Is this Max Steinberg?
Yeah, the 3.5X.
The guy who acts super quick and just throws his chips in like in 3 seconds.
No. Oh, no. Maybe he does. I mean, he's like just really good and unorthodox. He like 3.5Xs and stuff. He's like
He was at a WPT final table recently.
No.
Yes. Oh. Yes, he was. He was. Yes, he was. That's him. And he won a bracelet 2 years ago.
Are you thinking about the guy with glasses, KB, that acts really quick, that Ben knows? Whatever, we talk about it later.
Max Steinberg was at a WPT final table.
Yeah, but I don't think he acts quick unless I actually know.
That I don't quick. I don't know about that.
Whatever.
Yeah, maybe I'm thinking – I might be thinking of that, but it doesn't matter.
All right, so let's talk about sort of day seven, right? We talked a little bit about railing it on Twitter, and that was fun, and all the people that did that, props to that. But, you know, actually following the action was pretty intense. And I guess the people to talk about were our Stealth Monk and Negreanu. Those are the two, to me, most interesting characters, and I had the most interesting – stories happen on day seven.
Yeah, I'm not sure Stealth Monk would have been good for the game.
No, he would have been the worst for the game.
Yeah.
But he was an interesting story.
He was probably entertaining, but probably bad for the game.
Yeah.
He went out on a brutal hand.
So I actually found myself mostly, like, mostly fascinated by McKeon, actually. Not, I mean, obviously he's a chip leader now, but, like, he abused people so hard late. I mean, he might have just had hands. I don't know the situations because it was so hard to tell.
All he had to do was
following on a delayed Twitter stream.
All he had to do was just open every hand. Like, it's not that hard. Like, you have that many chips and there are that many stacks that are close to you. Like, you could open.
But not everybody does it. People don't do it every year.
I mean, it's pretty hard in the main event. Let's be real. Like, there's a lot of pressure there, and I don't think it fits one bit.
He had so many chips. Like, he could have lost. Like, if he could have opened 20 straight times and gotten 3-bet and folded and still been fine.
Okay,
like,
but you're talking about there's four stacks at the table that are really short, so all of a sudden he has to know every stack to the T, because if he raises, a lot of times he's going to have to call. There's a lot of math involved in this where, like, he has to be very careful he doesn't overstep his boundary. It's not just click raise.
As I was following it, I don't think he had to call any stack. For most of the time he was there.
Sure, because they were mostly over 10 bigs. If someone goes down to 9 or 8, all of a sudden, like, math comes in.
Yes, okay. That's fair, but that's it was tough. Mostly not. It was mostly, like, everyone was between 20 and 35 big blinds the entire time. And so, like, when that's the case, like, here's why it's autopilot to me. And, like, super – like, once again, give him all the props in the world because he executed on it, and that's always hard. But – he just had to, like, all he had to do to get in that mode was try it because it worked. Like it was, and it was going to work. Like you just had to have the balls to do it the first four or five times. And once you do it the first four or five times, and you get no one playing back at you, like
I mean, he was probably aware that nobody was going to play back at him. It's the main.
Yeah. Yeah. So
I mean, saying it's easy though is like I don't know. I don't think it's easy because you're still playing for millions of dollars.
I'm not saying it's easy. What I'm saying is it is, I think, pretty obvious that it's the right strategy.
Yeah.
And all you need to do is try it, and you will. It was clear he would be 100% successful if he tried it. And,
I mean, there's
and,
a lot that goes into it, too, like his sizing. Like, what if the big blind's defending, like, 60% of the time? Maybe I can 2.2 exit. If I 2.2 exit,
right.
do I have to call these shoves? I'm not sure he's on that level. I know he's a sicko, and he's got really good results. And, like, I've played with him before, and he's really, really good. I don't know if he's on that math level, but I think it's tougher than you're giving it credit for, I guess.
You know what? Maybe I'm just too simple, because my strategy
You're
there.
A simpleton.
I'm a simpleton. Because my strategy in that particular spot, and once again, with the lights on you, the pressure of it, and, you know, who knows, maybe I don't execute. But, you know, from my chair at home on Twitter.
I was in mine, too. fresh. And it was just a battle.
Yeah.
Remco, Kev Mathers, and they would say the same hand. It was so fun.
By the way, Tweet Deck, you Twitter scrub. Don't what are you refreshing actual like pages?
I refreshed every second. There's something else to
no.
do.
You download TweetDeck and you plug in the stuff there, and then the stream just rolls. It's like,
oh my god, that's amazing.
Yeah, I'll show it to you.
I guess my point about McGeehan is that, and correct me if I'm wrong, I can't remember a time in the last 10 years where somebody did that, where somebody steamrolled that hard on the bubble.
But he had such a big stack. Like he just
yeah, but he got those stacks. I mean, it's not like he had it the whole time. Like he got that stack.
He did. When they got to that point, he had like 50 million, like when they got to that point. Like he was like already a huge stack. Like the reason why
I didn't see any of the hands though, like we don't
know.
I know. You know, it's a lot.
I guess what I'm saying is I'm a simpleton, and like my thinking there is, well, I have a big stack. They're all kind of fucked ICM-wise. Let me just open, and I will open until someone plays back at me. And then unless someone shows that they have the balls to play back at me, I won't lose anything by testing this out. Like, even if it goes wrong three, four, five times in a row, I'm still, like, huge
which
stack.
Which it's not. No, which you're
not.
Absolutely right.
So,
you're right.
So
I mean, it's
same.
Is,
yeah.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, and I'm 100% that's just, like – he knows he can just run over that table. I mean, he went from – I mean, I wonder how many million he gained on the bubble.
You know, you could probably look it up.
Heaps.
Yeah. I mean, I guess what I would be really interested to see is his chip graph. You know how the Stars have that chip graph now?
Yeah.
I would love to see that for him.
Well, I'll tell you what. I know from day 4 to 5, like, or maybe 6 to 7, he was chip leader and then went down to, like, 19th. He still had heaps of big blinds, but – we easily could have seen him fade, and then he had another day where he went back up to the top. He's been there before, not in World Series events, but I know he's had some bigger scores, Venetian, stuff like that. So he clearly knew what to do, like, and he took advantage of it. I mean, Diego, you're right. Like, it is pretty easy. Like, 5 shorties, me, other table, raise every hand.
Just
and
try
actually,
it. Like, and when it works 4 or 5 times, like, you just keep doing
work.
It.
It's going to
work.
Right. And when they – like I said, he was the one that got screwed the most when they brought it hand for hand, because him playing 100 hands and winning probably 50% of them, his chip graph is going through the roof because nobody can really play back at him. I mean, you're talking about like so, – I mean, I doubt any of them care, but like there's a lot of exposure going to the final table. You get a patch. Like who knows how much money that is. A lot goes into the making the November 9.
So at 6:57 Pacific time – he had 22.5 million, which was at, I think, I don't know. I hate that they don't have the blinds on each blog post. So obviously he ended with, what, 60 million? So
yeah, and I can tell you that when they went started level 34, which was 13-handed, he had 40 million. That's about 3 hours after the time you just said. So he went from 20, 3 hours later he had 40. And then by the time they made the final table, he had 60.
And
he
a lot of that was set over set, too.
Yeah, I was going to say that.
Sure.
I know there's one big hand in there. Yeah, there's got to be one big hand in there that really I bumped him up there. So, like, he probably went from, like, 45 to 60 by doing that. Like, maybe that's probably... Mm-hmm.
Yeah, which is amazing because average sack is probably not even as much as he gained there.
Yeah.
But, yeah, he played well, and he's the favorite to win. It's really not even close. Yep. I'm sure there's a lot of other good players there. I think we know who Steinberg is. I've seen some people that follow Chan. So, yeah, it should be interesting.
So let's talk about Negreanu and his bust-out hand. Okay, so here are the details of the hand. So let me lay out the chip stacks, the blinds, all that stuff, so we can have a good discussion on this. And this was a pain in the ass to put together because WSOP.com sucks. no details. And they also got the action wrong. So
Hashtag bring back poker news.
Yes, seriously. All right. And before the damn page refreshes on me, let me get all this data out here. Okay. So based on the field update that happened three hands before this, where Daniel had 6.825 million. There were three hands after that. The blinds were 200,000-400,000 with a 50 ante. So he was in the big blind on this hand, so he lost 150 to get to this hand. So he started the hand with 66,675,000, which is a roughly 16.5 big blinds.
16.5 big blinds.
16.5 big blinds. And he is in the big blind.
And the antes were what here?
The ante was 50.
Okay, so basically...
and it's five people at his table.
Five
people at his table. Joe has 54.9 million or so. Butteroni has 9.3. This is three hands ago, so maybe they changed a little bit, but I'm not going to go repatch this together. Beckley has... And there goes the refresh. Beckley has 5.6 million, and Taransky has 6.2 million.
So basically there's one shorter stack, one even stack, we can say.
I mean, Taransky has 6.2, Beckley has 6.1, and Daniel has 6.6.
And so they're all even.
They're all even there, right.
Yeah.
And so, Daniel has 16.5 big blinds, the other guys have about 15 big blinds. But Butteroni has a little more. Butteroni has 8.5, so he has 21 big blinds. So, okay. So with that said, so what's in the pot here, Mark? So McKeon raises to 8,000. So what's in the pot before anyone makes
a raise? Small blind folds.
Right.
So it's Negreanu. So basically, if we reship here,
what are we taking down?
Our big blind, the small blind. It's basically 2 points some odd big blinds increase.
But what's our stack at the end of that? What's our stack if we go from 6.675 to what's in the
I mean, all that matters is big blinds.
Yeah, okay, fair.
I mean, we could get into it where, like, we can get an M and stuff, but I'll spend 15 hours on that.
Yeah.
the increase, so if we did reship, so basically McKeon folded, he'd been opened the button. He had been opening every hand, so he's opening literally 100% here.
Right, and Daniel has ace-4 in the big blind offsuit.
Yeah, and I wonder if he ships A6 or A7 here because Ace-4 with the wheel outs. I don't know. Like, I wonder what aces he is reshipping here or if he's just flatting full range. I can't imagine, like, Ace-Jack or Ace-10 gets flatted.
Right.
But, yeah, I mean, it's interesting because reshipping we see, like, I think it's safe to say Joe's probably going to call, like, 9 to 10%, like, Queen-Jack suited being the bottom Broadway suited. And then, like, I think he calls all pairs. We don't do well against that range, but, like, if
are
he's
you
opening
including,
100% and calling 10.
Well, in that 10%, though, are you including the fact that Daniel has an ace blocker? I mean, that's a big part of this, I think, as well.
Of course it is. It takes out a bunch of the combos.
You took out all the ace combos.
I forget a bunch
of the combos.
I mean,
right.
Honestly, he's probably going to call him with king jack suited and king 10 suited and king 9 suited, maybe ace jack suited, ace 10. 10% doesn't have all that, so it's just like an estimate.
Right.
It's going to be roughly around there. So he's opening 100, calling 10. So, yes, is this profitable? Absolutely.
Yeah, I mean, I think, and most of the universe has come out in favor of a shove, but you're advocating not a shove, right?
Really? About a reshove? I doubt it.
Yeah.
I doubt the universe is saying a reshove is the best.
I mean, that's what Twitter is pretty much saying.
Really? Yeah, see, I'm super – I know it's profitable, but I just don't see going from 16 to 18 big blinds when we're 11-handed. meaning that one more person goes out, we go 10-handed and get to see orbits are now what? We get to see 10 hands every orbit as opposed to 5 with right. the chip leader on our table. Things change. We also have a month and a half or whatever it is. How many months is it to prepare if Daniel's not good? His strategy, lifetime career, is small ball. So I'm definitely not shocked when he flatted. I could see shoving here. I know it's profitable. I can plug it in.
Yeah,
sure.
Right. But shoving is clearly profitable.
Yeah, but if it's 10-handed, it becomes a much better shove because we actually pick up maybe like almost a big blind more.
Yeah, right.
So like here we're only gaining 2 bigs, and I'm not sure if that's worse. I don't know. Like the 10% of the time we're out of the tournament or drawing very thin.
So
I don't know if I take that edge knowing I'm the best player left in the tournament.
So let me walk you – I want to walk through that thinking though a little bit, like break it down a little bit.
Sure.
So you, when Joe opens and Daniel looks at ace-4 and he's thinking that – and what it sounds like you're thinking is I'm just going to call here and if I hit an ace on the flop or something favorable, the wheel – you know, maybe you're obviously a 3-card flush with my ace of spades. Like, there's probably a set of flops that you call here that you're gonna just go to battle with on the flop, no matter
what.
Yeah,
and I think Daniel's probably, I mean, Daniel's much better than I am post flop, so his thinking's gonna be a little different. I think he's gonna win more of the times he doesn't flop.
That's exactly what I'm getting at. So you're every time an ace or a super favorable flop comes out, you're gonna win. Either you're gonna just take down post flop, or you're going to double up because you have a better hand.
Joe's probably gonna be prone to barrel here. I think if it comes ace high,
right.
he's probably that's not in Daniel's
right. No,
range.
Well, if Daniel's gonna play it this way, then and he hits an ace, then check raising is 100% the way to go. And that's what he did.
I don't know. Why not check call? Like it depends on the board, but like check call is pretty good because Joe's probably.
Yeah.
If it comes ace-8-4, ace-8-deuce.
I mean check raise if something dangerous is on the board, which is what this – So
have a strong enough hand to ever check raise. Like I'm not really happy check raise getting this in unless I have like 2 pair. Like I'm not going to check raise get in ace-x like unless it's like a super wet board. There's more of the time I'm just going to be check calling. But like the situation comes where it comes super wet, like the wettest of wet.
Right. I check raise was more of a substitute for be willing to go to the mat with your ace. But I mean, there are times where you're if Joe triple barrels on you, or gives you a big decision on the turn that you could actually fold an ace here.
If that's the case, then I'm more
of a fan of shoving. If that's the case, then shove it. Why are you putting yourself in that situation where you
because
might?
Because I'm good at poker, and I'm not scared of tough decisions.
Fuck you! I'm not scared either.
I don't need to make the easiest decisions. I just don't think a 2 big blind gain is enough to take away my edge. Like, and I don't know what his edge is. Like, I don't know how he feels about the table.
I'm sure. I mean, you've heard him talk about himself.
Yeah.
I'm sure. His edge is huge. His edge is probably very big on most of these players. But
yeah. Oh, I don't know. Like, we're talking about, like, this is the final, you know, like, this is
good players.
Table. There's good players.
Yeah. Probably not that huge, but.
But I do like the fact that I can go to the final table with maybe 16 bigs. And it's not like, I know it's profitable. I keep saying that, but I know we can plug this in. And online, I would reship here, like, probably 100% of the time. Barring like a 10.
Explain that. Why?
Because
why
I play a million tournaments. I get to play the main event once a year. It's a 10K buy-in. There's a certain prestige in making the final 10. Maybe a pro deal. That's not in Daniel's thinking. That's in mine. I'm fine flatting here because I think Joe's going to barrel a lot of ace-x boards. So I'm going to get 2 streets when I'm just going to check call mode. I'm also confident that like there's going to be maybe a better spot. And I don't think going from 16 to 18 bigs does nothing for me. I see no difference in it. Like, I can raise one hand, but I don't even see that as a viable option when Joe's probably opening 100%, like, from every position, as he should, or damn near close to it. So I just don't see a big increase from 16 to 18. Now, if we're full ring, this becomes different because we gain three lines instead of two.
You know, and that to me,
I don't even know if I'm doing it then.
That to me, though, is the thing that I think maybe is tilting me over to where you're at, in the sense that I forgot that there's really not a lot of you know, there's not a lot of antis in there, and that makes it less of a benefit to your stack.
Absolutely.
That is true. I didn't put that.
And it's like I said, I think shoving could be. I know, if I'm not confident about my post-flop play, I think shoving is good. I think you're going to turn a profit, but, we're talking the bubble of the main event, this is pretty big spot, the bubble, and get it in dead where, who knows what the sizing was on the flop, so why don't we say the flop and get into that?
Sure. So the flop is, so Daniel, we're not going to reveal Joe's hand yet. So Daniel just calls with ace of spades, four of diamonds, and the flop is ace of diamonds, king of spades, ten of diamonds. So you have the flush draw, obviously the straight, the straight and straight draws is out there. It's a super wet board.
The wettest of wet.
The wettest of wet. I mean, fuck, what if Joe has king ten? I mean, they can't play for just one hand, but that's in his range, obviously.
Yeah, but he calls all two pair hands anyway. If we reach three, all two pair.
Yeah, of course. Right. So
not to be result oriented, but just on this texture.
Yeah. So WSOP has the action wrong, but what happened was Daniel checks, McKeon bets 700, and Daniel ships the rest.
And now the spot becomes, now there's 4.5 bigs pre. The C-bet makes two more. There's 6.5 bigs out there. So now the increase becomes super juicy on a wet board.
Yeah.
We can get called by worse. This goes back to Daniels. This is a much, much lower variant route. If we want to take a high variance route, which we never want to do in the main event, I don't want to flip coins to final table the main event. I'll save that for one of the online birds I play. I'm happy going to the streets here and taking a much lower variance route, and he gets his money in a really good spot. I guess I haven't read many people that were saying he should have shoved. I think it's an option. I think it's a viable option for sure. But I think if we really think of how Daniel plays, I think we understand why he flats. He's not really all in type of guy, He 4-bet folded ace king in a spot where more than likely I'm guessing he's flipping. And he passed on that high variant spot, so it doesn't shock me he didn't shove here.
Okay. Well, you know what? I mean, you make some pretty freaking good points. I have to admit that's why you're the pro. And this is what it's like at the TPE house.
When you come back. I want to give credit to Ben because this is a spot I used to shove blindly. And I still will online. Yeah, I mean, Ben has worked with me with ICM and stuff like that, so I give credit to him for the flat.
Nice.
Interesting spot. I just want to be very clear, this spot, we have to go low variance. It's important to get 10-handed and see way more hands, and Joe's not going to be, it's just going to be more control. We're going to have a bit more control, and 16 bigs is fine. We've all played 16 bigs with two-hour levels, or we all haven't done that, but two-hour levels is amazing.
That was
16 bigs, right?
It's like 30 bigs.
I mean, it's a really good structure. So, I mean, I really can't talk shit about high variance or low variance because of what I did in the main anyway.
That's coming up. So let's wrap up. Let's wrap up our main event general coverage. Awesome hand analysis, Mark. This was worth staying on the phone with you for a couple hours because I love this type of conversation.
Yeah, you're pretty adamant on reshove there, and I was like, I get it, but
I was, but I can see exactly the line of thing. I mean, you laid out your points really well. Maybe it's the easy poker thing, right? Maybe that's what it comes down to. It's like that's just easy poker, right?
So what makes the most sense is the fact that it's a main event. KB, how do you feel about the spot? Is this a spot you think you would just ship, or I have a feeling you would defend because of what Ben's taught you?
Yeah, I would probably defend here, especially in the main.
But we've worked with
Ben. I even defend here quite a bit live, and I think I'd probably get yelled at for it. But you'd be like, just ship, bro. But it is different.
I feel like that's what I usually would say.
Yeah, and I'm not saying, like, we should play every tournament differently, but I think this is maybe one of the few where you can play a little differently in this exact spot. Like, if we were still, like, 58-handed here, like, it's easy snap shift,
yeah,
you know? But
fist bump.
There is something to be said for getting 10-handed with 16, well, I guess 15 bigs after you throw one more in. And you're as good as Daniel, like.
And if we all played 10Ks all year, if we played 110Ks, sure, we could play this spot as a reship all day. We just don't get in that many 10Ks, so.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right. I just wish Daniel would have held.
All of us do.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. Well covered. Let's jump into the rest of the main event coverage that we want to do here. Any thoughts on the players at the final table? We talked a little bit about Pierre. Who else is there?
We talked about Steinberg, chip leader McKeon.
Yep. McKeon.
I think it's going to be an interesting final table. I can't wait to hear the other guys' stories too, because I don't know much about the rest of them. So should be interesting.
Yeah,
I think there's a couple guys who are pretty short, so it's going to be interesting to see how they like, and they're around the same stack too. The two lowest chip stacks are right around 6 million.
Yeah,
so it's going to be interesting to see like how they approach the table, like as soon as they sit down, because there's obviously a pay jump to consider. So like, are they going to try to wait each other out for one of them to bust, or are they going to try to get a double up so they don't have to be in that spot? I think that's going to be pretty fascinating.
This is one of the
what
oldest.
What is the page up anyway?
This is one of the oldest final tables. You got we talked about the 72-year-old Neil Blumenfeld, who's third place with 22 million chips, is 61. Wow. Z Stern, who is the staller, was about 30 million chips, is 36, and then everyone else is between 24 and 27.
Whoa. 36 is old now?
Well, I said old.
My life.
One of the oldest. One of the oldest final table. I mean, usually you get like, you know, 8, 20-something-year-olds and then like a 40-year-old. Like here you got two people over 60, a 30-year-old, and then you got a bunch of 24, 27-year-olds.
I think I saw average age of the main event overall was like 38 or 39.
Is it?
Yeah.
I've seen that
stat.
That
tweet. There was a tweet about it, male and female. Women were a bit older.
The stat I recall, and this is not from this year, but I'm assuming it's probably similar from last year, was like they showed the average age of the main event participant and then the average age of the final table participant, and it was like 36 to like 25, like showing how dominant, you know, younger players are in the game, but. You know, in this particular case, a couple sweep through to the.
Who was the guy that four bet the king six? Is that Neuville?
That's Neuville. Yeah, he's
he probably
watched
some big dog videos.
and I think people have talked about him in other places, but real quickly, I mean, this guy is no joke. He was the CEO of Hasbro Europe for many, many years, and as part of his contract, he was not allowed to step foot in a casino. So he didn't play. You didn't know that?
No.
Yeah, so he didn't play any poker for 25 years or so. Then the day he retired, he went to the PCA and finished 18th. And he's satellited into 23 consecutive EPTs. So he's played 23 consecutive EPTs. I'm pretty sure he finished second or third two times in an EPT, and he's obviously made it pretty far here and did play, you know, made some sicko moves. There is also one particular hand that he had against Max Steinberg where he checked the second nuts on the river, checked back the second nuts on the river.
Yeah,
he told Max Steinberg he had a read on him.
And I wonder if there's any truth to that, but I kind of feel like he must have had something.
He must have. Like, how else do you?
I was sick when I read that.
How do you check back? Yeah, I'll get you the hand.
It was like King Jack or something, or Queen.
Yeah, it was King Jack, and yeah, he had Queen Jack, and Max had King Jack, and that was like the straight right there, and
Max,
you know,
had the nuts.
Max had King High straight nuts, and he had Queen High straight for second nuts, and he checked it back and told Max he had a read on.
Max goes, "Why'd you fold? Or how could you check back?"
Yeah, and he said, "I had a read on you."
Yeah.
And I tweeted like, "Oh my God, what a boss!" And Vinny Pahuja tweeted back at me, "That's just like yeah, it looks good on paper. Like, it's a cool story, but, like, that's such a bad play, like, in general. And I agree. Like, it's negative Chip EV, but, like, plus boss EV. Because, like...
Yeah, and who knows if... Maybe he saw him check the... I don't know. Like, yeah, it probably... It is bad. It seems bad, but...
Yeah.
Who knows if he had some sick live read? Like, who are we to say?
Yeah. No, if he had a sick live... Like, if he... But can he be that confident in a specific read that Max doesn't have, like, third nuts? You know what I mean? Like
yeah.
Max is probably pretty comfortable with third nuts. Like, maybe not super comfortable. And I think the board... I think third nuts on the board actually probably would have been, like, bad given the way the hand played out. Like, I don't have it all in front of me, like I said. But... still, like, that you're that sure that you can confidently check behind second nuts? Like, that's pretty crazy.
Yeah, that is crazy.
That's pretty sick. So, I honestly, he's the guy I'm rooting for. I'm rooting for him and Max. Those two guys to get heads up. Max, because I think he's a great player, and I enjoy, like, he's just given a lot in terms of his analysis, and Pierre, because I think he'll do the most. I think he'll do the most for the game, being a 72-year-old winning the. I mean, think about that—a 72-year-old winning the main event. That's pretty fucking sick.
Yeah, it is sick.
Yeah,
and he's got a shot. He's got a shot.
Oh, absolutely, especially if he's four betting King Six.
Yeah,
because of heart.
So speaking about four betting King Rags, why don't
five
we get into
betting.
five betting? Why don't we get into our? I guess now we're moving into the strategy segment. Although we've been talking some strategy, let's talk about some of our own hands from our World Series this year. Mark,
how about I'll lay out before we talk about my bust. I'll lay out another hand, which I think was pretty significant. And KB, I think you remember it, so we'll just test Ron Fez Buddy here and see what he thinks.
Okay.
Okay, so we're.
I like the easy.
Well, if you don't remember it, tell me too. Well, I'm still gonna ask your opinion anyway. So we're at 1-200, 50K. We started with 30. We got the greatest table draw ever. Like,
1-200. Is this the main event?
Yes, main event.
1-200, and you have 50K.
50K effective. So he has. Yep. I think I have maybe a little more than 50K. Great table draw. No annies. Under the gun opens 600 to 600, full 3x. Read on villain is super tight. He's played really nitty, hasn't got out of line.
How do you get his chips, you know?
Yeah, quad nines and set versus top pair. So, like, nothing crazy. Like, we saw a showdown, seemed really tight, played him pass, could have got more. So he opened 600, folds around to us in the small blind with ace-ace, two black aces. We make it 1,700. It's pretty big, but, like, effectively.
Yeah, I love it for many reasons. Effective stacks. He's got a strong range. Yeah, okay.
KB, what do you think? You think I could go bigger, small?
I think you can, before you go, I think you may maybe even go bigger.
Right? Yeah.
Yeah.
I just need the call. But, yeah.
I don't mind going slightly bigger just because it's one of those, like, live spots where if they're calling X, they're calling...
Yeah, if they're calling 17, they're probably calling 22. Like,
That's a good point. Yeah, I think could have gone, like, 22. And, like, describing the villain, he's not opening under the gun 3X light.
No.
He's calling.
No, yeah, he's calling. And by making it 22, if he re-raises you...
It's just a really big 3-bet with the nuts, but, I mean...
I know.
I don't know. Like, I guess... In the off chance he has, like, something that he may fold. I don't know. I think he's going to call or not. So I think it's one of those spots maybe he was talking about. So.
Let me lay out a thought process here, and it hasn't been fully developed, so I could be wrong. But, like, you know, you want to get as much into the pot, like, as possible pre-flop with the aces.
Kinda, but not really. Like, no.
Like, if you make it 17 and he re-raises you to like what's his size going to be here to like 42, maybe 38? Like, what do you think he makes it?
I mean, I think he probably makes it bigger than that. I think he probably
makes
like 3x's it.
He probably 3x's, right? So you maybe like towards like 5.
I'm not like if he does that, I'm gonna get it all. Like, it's just going to be a guy overplaying.
Well, that's the point I was about to make. Like, what do you need to make it here that if he has queens or kings and he's ready to go, like, that you can get it all right now?
And like, I don't think I can get it all with queens, but, like, yeah, okay, I don't think the sizing is going to matter there.
Okay.
You know, like, and, like, I agree with making it bigger, but, like, I don't, like, the bigger I make it, like, and, like, we're so deep, so, like, it's going to be hard for me to get it all anyway. Like, I think I could make it a little bigger now that I think about it. Yeah, like, maybe 2K. But, yeah, I don't know. I just don't want that much in there. I want to see flops. Like, I know I have aces, but, like, if I have one pair on a weird board, it becomes difficult. Yeah. Now, like,
well, that was my other thing then. Like, what are you going to, like, you are, like, you're 100% getting a call here every time if he doesn't raise you. So
I don't know about that. I still think he has a raise fold range. Like,
even under the gun for 1,100 more?
I mean, I'm 50, three betting out of the small blind. Like,
deep. I mean, fuck, I'd call you with 9-10 suited.
Yeah, I mean, I think, but there's saying he doesn't have a folding range is like, I don't know. I think he folds like maybe 5% of the time.
But he's not on the button. If you say he's super tight and he's 3Xing it from under the gun.
Yeah, but if he's super tight, is he calling a 3X 3-bet from the small blind? Probably thinking I'm maybe
every pair. Players, every pair. He's calling you with every pair.
Sure, but is he calling me with 9-10 suited? I don't know.
He's not raising 9-10 suited. He's not raising 9-10 suited under the gun. He's super tight. He makes a 3X.
Yeah, is he calling me with queen jack suited?
I don't even think he's raising. He's opening.
You think he's calling 100% of the time?
Because I think his range is so narrow to open under the gun 3X as a super tight player.
Okay, so what is his range?
So I think it's pairs, and I think he calls with every pair.
You think he calls with twos?
Yeah.
I don't.
You're 50K, you don't think he's calling with 1,100 at a 50K effective stack?
No, because, like, he has to worry about getting out. Like, we can go set over set, and he goes broke. I don't think.
How? Really? I mean, that's how I went out of the main event last year. So that shit's real, yo.
Whoa. Just
got him.
But.
I mean, like. But, I have a really strong range here, like, so, yeah, he should call deuces. I don't know if he will, though.
Yes, you're really strong, but does he think he can stack you
if he opens deuces.
With deuces?
I don't know if he even thinks like that.
Okay.
And I don't know what he thinks of my range either. I don't, like, I don't have that read. I just know he's really tight. Yeah, I think he's calling 95%. I just think 100% is absurd. I don't think he's calling 100%.
I guess I'm just going on, like... Like, and you've played a lot more live than I have, but, like,
not really.
A super tight player.
You played more live than me.
Maybe that's true.
I probably have, like, 50 tournaments in me.
I played much more than that. Okay. And then, like, this guy sounds like maybe, like, a Foxwood regular, which I'm, you know, like, I'm picturing in my mind. And, like, I've never seen a guy open 600 under the gun with 50K and fold to 1,700 bet. Like,
I have.
I don't think I've ever seen that. From the way you're describing him, like, you know, his range is tight enough pre, and it's such a good price for stacking you when you put sort of a lot of strength here. Like, I'm looking at you in his position, and I think most people will say, okay, this is like a big hand. This is like probably a big hand for this guy because he knows my range is going to be pretty and he may not be mentally saying it that way, but he's probably thinking like – he's probably intuiting that – you have a strong hand because you think he has a strong hand, so you're raising. I don't know if I said that right, but
no. I mean, and I agree with you for the most part. I just don't think it's 100%. But whatever, it's a minor detail.
All right, okay, it's a minor detail.
It really is. Like, I mean, it really is. Like, I think he's folding like 5% of the time.
That's why this podcast is going to be 4 hours long.
Yeah, fuck both of you.
Okay,
let's talk about what chips you threw in. Did you throw in hundreds or 25s? Because that makes a difference.
All right, he calls 1,700 big blind folds. He calls. We go heads up to the flop. Ace 10 king rainbow. Jim, I don't think he has many jack queens in his range. I'm really happy. I don't think he has kings. I think he
doesn't have many jack kings. He's got
jack queen suiteds.
He's got jack queens, but not a lot of them. Like, once
suited.
Again, jack queen suited.
Four combos.
Like, he may fold jack queen under the gun. If he's
tight.
Yeah, like,
but
you
not
said
suited.
Maybe. I mean, you told me he's super tight. I guess I'm just, like, hanging on that super tight. Like, is he super
tight?
Yeah,
but I mean, a super tight player doesn't fold jack queen suited.
Yeah. Okay. Fair. You're right. He doesn't fold. Okay. He doesn't fold Jack Queen suited. You're right. But that's not 100% of the time he opens Jack Queen suited. Put it that way. We'll throw your 100% of the time back at you.
okay. There's a minor detail. I don't give a shit.
It's a minor detail. Okay. But yes, Jack Queen suited is in his range, but like that's the only hand you're worried about.
Yeah, but I'm also worried about getting value because I don't think this is a board where he flops too many two pairs since I blocked.
Well, that's what I wanted to get into. I mean, you have the ace blocker, so he doesn't have a lot of ace kings. He does not have any king tens.
Suited. I mean, it's doubtful.
Way less of those than queen jack. But maybe a couple queen king tens. No ace. Not many ace kings. You know. Let's see. Does he have any other? Does he have a queen nine? No, probably not. Okay. So obviously, you know. Now we got to think about how we're going to get value. So I would just check here.
Oh, I'm not checking here.
Okay.
Ever. We're like. I'm just too deep. We already giving him a strong range.
You're first to act, right? Okay,
yeah.
You're first to act. Okay.
Like,
yeah.
I have to worry about King Queen, giving him a free card when he's going to call the flop. There's a lot of hands that call the flop.
Let me put myself in this. Like, I have to visualize myself at the table to, like, pick hands like this. So you're first to act, and ace 10 king, and... Yeah, you bet here. I mean, he's going to call you with a lot of hands.
Jacks,
that call.
Queens.
Yeah.
A lot of hands.
Yeah.
He folds nines or tens, but he probably – nines, not tens.
Might peel off a street with nines.
On
ace, king,
ten, and he's a nit? You're crazy.
No, you're right.
There's no way.
He's not. You're right. Okay. So,
right.
So wait. Okay, so if you're betting – let's talk about that. If you're betting, what is he calling with here?
Jacks, queens, king, queen, queen, ten suited, ten – random ace X's he has. It's one of those spots where, like, there's a lot of cards that are going to shut me down, like, where I'm not going to get value. And, like, I don't think he's going to be betting. I block ace X. Like, I'm going to bet, and he's either going to have something like I'm talking about the Broadway hands, or he's just going to fold.
Yeah. And, you're probably going to get, like, two streets here if he has.
Yeah, and I mean, like, if he has, like, 10 jack of hearts and it turns a 10 – I get it all.
Yeah.
So, like, I need to be building a pot now, especially at this depth.
Yep. Okay.
I would consider checking ace 10 4, but probably not. I'd probably just bet really small. So, our three bet was the 1700. That puts 3400 in, put out the 200. So, there's 3600 in. We go ahead and bet, like, right around half. I think it was, like, 1750, 1800.
Yeah, nice. Nice size.
He calls. The turn is a seven of hearts, which is the second heart now. Not too worried about that at the moment.
That's a good card for you.
Yeah. So now we're looking at 3,600, 34, looking at seven, around 7,200 in the pot, and we bet a little bigger here.
Here's what I want to ask you. Now, can you get three streets of value or? Or are you only going to get two streets and you have to pick, is this going to be the street or is the next one going
to
be the street?
Well, it has to be this because, like I said, like there's going to be those hands where he has, like, a middling pair with a gut shot. So, like, it's going to be hard. Like, we want to get it now.
Yeah.
While he has that gut shot, we're on the river, he doesn't have a card.
Yeah. That's right. So he'll call his draws and a lot of his – queens and jacks, if something else comes in, he might fold.
I mean, I have to protect. I mean, there's two hearts on the board. There's gut shot.
Yeah, two hearts. Yeah, there's gut shot, right.
But we also – I mean, I'm not betting for protection. I'm betting for value because I think it's clear he has something here. I don't know, like – I don't think it's – well, I'm not going to say what I think yet.
So wait, so how much is in the pot now? 36 plus 1750 times 2, so 35, so 71?
71, 72. And we bet a little bigger here.
I want to guess a bet. So we said 72? So, see, here's a spot here where I think, like, he's pretty, like, it's pretty close to a binary decision for him, like, in most of your betting range. Like, sure, he'll fold to, like he may fold to 7K, but, like... I think he'll call like 4.5 as much as he'll call 3.5. So, like, I would go bigger. Like, I would go with like 4.2 to 4.5 here.
KB?
I would probably do about the same. Although I think I remember this hand, and I think I remember what you bet, so I might be, like, a little bit.
Okay.
But, yeah, I would probably go right around, like, 45.
I bet 38. I think we could go a bit bigger. I actually like your guys' thought process there. I think it's a binary spot as well. He's calling, and he's folding the same range. Yeah. Could go a little bigger, for sure.
Like, let's stop there for a second, because I think that's a huge part of, like, being good live, is exploiting, like, these binary decisions and sizing effectively.
Yeah, but, I a lot of my sizing stuff online is based on reads. I mean, I've played, like, this is 1-200. Like, this is, like, level 2. I mean, I have a read that he's tight, but I'm not sure, like, his holding. Maybe he doesn't call for – I can't definitively say I think he's going to call 5K and fold.
No,
fold 5K and
yeah.
Call 3K.
I mean, I think 5K might – the alarm bells for him, but I think anything under 5. Anything
I mean,
under
how
five,
do you have that read? How do you have that read? Like, that's like such a hard read to have. Like, I don't know. Like,
it's a profile. It's kind of just a profile, and it's an assumption that most people don't pay attention to the pot sizing of things. They just don't. Like, they just, like, if he looks at it, he just sees a bunch of chips, and he's not thinking he's betting 3.8 into 7.2 as opposed to thinking he's betting 4.4 into 7.2. He's just like, I'm going to call here because my hand is good, or I don't believe the guy, or I think I have that. I think I'm like, I should be calling here.
So
it's
you
like,
don't think someone's more likely to call a pair and a gut shot to a smaller sizing than a bigger sizing?
I think the question you asked is, the answer is yes. But it's a degree of how much.
But even if it's say it's like 10% more, he's going to call 3,800 as opposed to like 46. Like, that's pretty big.
I wouldn't go 46. I'd probably go like 43, 44.
Okay.
And
42.75.
And I think that it's almost binary between 38 and 43. For this guy.
Yeah, I mean, I agree. I'm just saying I think that's really tough to have that type of read. Like, I'm not sure I agree either way.
Like, I don't think you need – I disagree. I don't think it's tough to have that kind of read. I think that's a default assumption you have to make until you have a read otherwise with a lot of live players.
No, like, I think the complete opposite. I think I'm going to get the value I know I can get when I know I'm getting called by a wider range to smaller sizing than to bigger sizing where I'm just guessing. And I guarantee you I print in that spot as opposed to someone that's always going to be betting bigger.
Okay.
You're good in general, you're going to get called to smaller sizing. It's just how it works. Like,
yeah, but this guy is probably calling or not between those two sizes, I think.
I'm not going to argue this. I think it's what we're talking about.
Yeah.
I really do. I think
another three-hour conversation. Okay, yeah, fair. Okay. And look. You know what? I'm never 100% like adamant about these things.
I love talking hands with you because we do this.
Exactly. I just like to explore it.
And you know what? The fact that you said that, I'm definitely going to think about that now because it's – you know, I'm not a live pro. Like, so it's interesting. I don't know. I guess I'm like unsure.
I just think they don't think as much as you, and I think they make – there's more binary decisions and there's money to be made and kind of like if you do it and it works, then your river bet is going to be a lot bigger as well, and you'll make more money there. And like even going back to your flop, even go back to your pre-flop, you know, if I'm right about 22 being the right size, like this whole thing, you made a lot more money. And I could be wrong, but like is the percentage that I'm wrong, does that make up for it by how much more you're making? Like it's like. But multi-layered, okay.
Yeah.
All right, let's move on. I'm getting way too into this.
Okay, so
I was just about to get my calculator out, too.
KB shut the recorder off about 5 minutes ago.
We 3-bet out of the small blind, C-bet, ace, king, 10, Rambo. We bet 1,800 on the turn. We got called, or on the flop, we got called. The turn was a 7 in hearts. Diego likes a little bigger. KB likes a little bigger. I make it 3,800 in a 72, which is already big for me. He calls. So now we're looking at 8...
72 plus 76.
12, around 13.5.
Okay.
And the river is a 3 of hearts, so backdoor hearts gets there. I'm not too concerned about that at this moment. It's tight. So we bet roughly 5K into 13.5, And I'm not going to argue about sizing here because
we'll
be talking for an hour. And he makes
I don't mind sizing here because
it's a different spot. It is
a completely different spot. I like your sizing here because I think that he either made his hand or he didn't. And if
what do you think changed? Like
what I think changed is that he's not going to call a big bet now without a made hand, but a smaller bet he will call if he thinks
like
you're
king queen or something.
Yeah, that's right, exactly. Like if his hand has marginal value, now he'll be like, well, I can call. I actually might have made it smaller, like might have made it four. So I guess I will argue sizing, because I think like king queen might call 4K. It'll probably call 5K too if he's gonna call.
Okay, I'm
gonna
stop you. Let's just go.
Okay, let's keep going. Yep.
Because we.
Yep. Yep.
Okay, so we make it like 45 is five. He makes it 12K. There's 26, like roughly 26 to 28K in the pot. It's
You made it 4.5 and he made it 12?
Yeah, so it's 7,500 to win roughly 28K. We're almost getting 4-1 to call.
How ugly.
Yeah, so.
So he called you on the flop. He called you on the turn.
Ace, king, 10, rainbow. He check calls. Heart on turn. Seven of heart on turn. So flush draw. We bet. He calls. Heart river. Yeah. And now he raises our.
You bet he raises. And the flush comes in. There's the queen jack that we've been worried about.
In.
Yeah. The queen jack that we've been worried about.
Yeah, but so, he raises queen jack on the flop or turn.
What cards were hearts on the flop? Do you know?
It was either the king or the 10. I think it was the 10. It was the 10. Yeah, it was a 10.
So he could have the king, queen of hearts.
Yes.
Yeah. Oh, man. That's ugly. God, this is one of those spots where it's like, oh, my God, how do I fold aces instead of aces?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, and I tank for quite a bit.
Yeah, I'm tanking right now, so I got to think it through. If you want to pause the thing.
yeah, it's a pretty sick spot. I remember this so like this. I remember this hand coming through untaxed like so clearly.
All right, so he. Do you think this guy has it in him to bluff a river like that?
No.
Yeah,
but I don't think he has queen jack.
What is he doing for value then?
I don't think he ever has queen jack.
I mean, he could have.
He raises queen jack on the flop.
See, he could have tens. He could have tens. He could have kings.
Don't we think he doesn't have kings? He probably five bets kings.
Yeah, right. Pre-flop. Yeah, he doesn't have kings, so he could have tens.
Yeah, but he'd probably hear from that on the flop return.
Yeah, you're right. And we don't think he has sevens because we didn't think he would have called you on the flop with sevens.
No, we don't think.
Or threes. So we're worried about king, queen of hearts here, and queen jack.
I mean, queen jack, I think he raises the flop or turn.
Yeah. But if he doesn't have it in him to bluff, what does he think he's doing for value?
I just don't really think he's ever bluffing here. I mean, there's a small percentage. I never give zero unless I'm like...
Yeah. Sure. So his value hands that you beat are basically tens. Am I missing anything?
No, there's two pair combos. They're just unlikely.
Yeah. I put them so far discounted.
Yep. But, I mean, they're there.
Yeah. So it's just tens you beat, and then it's king, queen, and everything else. Ugh. God. I'm folding. I'm not telling anyone.
Yeah, we're getting 4-1. Okay, so I tanked for 5 minutes.
Now, let me just say something. I don't know if I would have folded in hand because we thought through this very thoroughly, like all streets, and like that's a I don't know, that's tough. Like
and we had help. We had three people.
I called the clock on myself. I said call the clock. Like I can't stop. And I folded and I paid him to see his hand. Yeah, I said I'll give you $40 to see your hand. And during the hand, I mean whatever, I'm not gonna pat myself on the back, but during the hand I said the same thing you said. I said king, queen of hearts makes sense.
Yeah.
And he shows king, queen of hearts.
Okay.
But it's literally the only thing that makes sense.
It's the only,
it's the only thing that makes sense.
Yeah, because, I mean, the tens raise you at some point. The kings.
So does queen jack.
So does queen jack. Yeah. It's the
literally
only thing that makes sense.
And if we think he's never bluffing. I mean, not never. I mean, like we already said, we're never saying never. But very, very rarely.
It's either king, queen of hearts. And if you don't think he has the bluff in him, like, honestly, I'm thinking here, like, I probably
it could be other hearts too, but
I've probably bluffed in his spot before, like not necessarily knowing what the hell I was doing, but I probably play a little wilder than he does.
Oh yeah, for sure.
So, wow. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that's really all that makes sense to me.
Yeah.
Is keeping the hearts.
That's it, because I didn't talk to you about the hand.
Yeah.
No, I never talked to you about that hand.
Never heard of this hand.
Yeah. So it's sick.
I remember when Mark first sent us his hand in Vegas, and I was like, wow, I don't know if I could ever fold aces there. Like, I just can't imagine doing it. And then after talking it through with Mark at the house,
yeah.
He would, like, it made so much sense. Like, literally, only one hand makes sense.
Yeah, and this is that,
one.
Like,
yeah.
So if we go back to 3 hours ago, what I was saying was when we talked about, like, talking hands with Ryan at PTs and just talking to people at the house, this is, like, exactly what I was getting at. Like, having these kind of conversations just got me in such the right mindset to make good decisions at the table. Like, that's why it's great to have poker friends around you when you're
oh, absolutely. And I'm impressed that you got that, Diego, because I think that's yeah, it's a tough hand. But like, you got it spot on, so that's really impressive. It's
all right. Dropping the mic and the podcast, and we are going to bed.
Later.
I'll do my bust out hand quickly.
Yeah, go ahead. I got one or two hands for you guys, and then we'll
day two. I'm doing okay, like, whatever. Things are going well. We're going in the right direction. I had 3-bet villain a couple times. He opens cutoff. No, he opens hijack. Yeah, he opens hijack. We're in the big blind with king 4 off. Pretty standard, just a flat here. With Annie's, we're getting a really good price. For whatever reason, I 3-bet. First time I 3-bet. Which isn't, you know, whatever. It's fine. It's still fine to 3-bet here. I think flatting's optimal.
Wait. What were the positions again? I'm sorry. Say
he's
it again.
Hijack, and he
he's
opens
hijack.
1750. And
okay.
It gets to me, and I make it 5200 flat. Out of the big blind with king 4 off. Yeah,
right.
Like, I like
fine.
That.
Yeah.
I mean, I think it's fine so far.
Yeah, I mean, like, it's not ultimately wrong or ultimately bad. Like, it's, like, part of your range to do that, so whatever.
Yeah, I wish I would have hit 3-bet once before. Even Ryan said that. He's like, yeah, I think you should, if this is okay. He actually doesn't hate to play overall, just as long as I had 3-bet once before or twice before, and right. I hadn't. Well, I have history with this guy, though. Super ag. He's opening, like, 70% folded to, probably something like that.
Yeah.
He tanks for quite a bit, and he makes it 9,000. And I pretty quickly – and I'm getting a massage at this time. My back was killing me. And maybe take, like, 10 seconds, and I pile, like, basically 45 bigs with king 4 off right into fucking king. And, like, you know, some people are like, oh, my God, that's some boss shit. But, like, dude, this was, like, the dumbest thing ever. You're talking the main event, like, the greatest structure.
Yeah. Yeah, it's the main event, dude.
Like, this is, like, just way – this was just a punt.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that's it. So I punted the main event for 10.
Look, you got heart. You got heart in this value for that. But
yeah, but it's – like, sure, I could believe that in something else. Like, and the thing is, like – everyone,
dude,
like, you could say it's funny, but I 5-bet shoved ace 5 in the 2500, and it's the only reason I went deep.
Yeah. Right. I get it.
This is different, but, I mean,
Well, that reminds
me
of that.
On this table.
You know what's funny about that, too, is when I heard about the hand, I refrained from saying anything because I didn't want it to be about me. But and that was how I busted the Punta Cana Classic. When I opened aces from the button, the guy 3-bet me from the big blind with king 4. I 4-bet, and he 5-bet piled like 60 big, like 65 big blinds with king 4 and then got there. And so when I heard this hand – and that pot was and that was on day one before dinner. That pot was for the average stack going into the money.
Jesus.
It was like 160K or something like that. At like 500, 100 or something, 500, 1,000. But anyway, like, so when I heard that, I was like, yeah, that's a fucking punt. And I'm so, like, I was like, that is the punt that I was seething over for 2 months.
it's funny, Ryan, like, says, like, Ryan Van Sant, he goes, like, if you 3-bet a couple times out of the big blind, I don't hate it. But I still hate it no matter what. But, you know, it is what it is. You live and learn, and, like,
yeah, that's it.
But, yeah, you got to look yourself in the mirror and be like, yep, I punted.
Yeah, and you know what? Some, like, you've probably done that before and got it through, right? So
Like, I mean, yeah, like I said, I did that in the 2500. I went deep in with ace-5 off, 5-bet shove, 40 bigs. And, like, I literally don't think I would have survived had I not done that. Right. Or I don't think – I don't know. Just allows – sometimes you got to get cray-cray.
Yeah, it happens.
But, yeah, I didn't
it's
like –
It's funny how – like, it's funny how different everything could be, like – there are there's many times where you do that, and that guy just is like, wow, and he snap folds. Like, and it's just like, and you're like, I'm a genius. I had the king blocker. It worked perfectly.
Yeah, right. But, I mean, that's obviously, if I wanted to get into depth, that's what I would explain, but we'll save everyone. But, yeah, the thing was, too, compared both spots, I had a way better read on this guy than I did on the other guy when it worked. So,
yeah.
You know, like, I still think it's really unnecessary with that stack and this structure. So yeah, we punted. Yeah. So let's do. You guys have a hand each or two hands, whatever. So let's go with whoever wants to.
Okay, so here's a hand that I thought was pretty interesting from the bounty tournament, that the one that I made a deep run in. So we are maybe 15 minutes before dinner on day two. There's 90 people left. We started with 2,300 or so, 2,200. So we're starting to get deep. We're at 2,000, 4,000. I have 85K. It's been an up and down day two for me. I doubled up a shorty the first hand of day two. Then I was able to run it up to about 100K at 1,000, 2,000, and from there I really just kind of ran card dead, and like we talked about it earlier, you know, I whiffed some flops, I had C bets, I three bet the guy to my right who was opening a lot, and he just piled on me, and so, you know, I went from like a 50 big blind stack, and as the blinds raised, I find myself with about 20-21 big blinds. So it folds to me on the button, which was rare in this spot because I really had two super aggressive guys to my right. And I look down at king three off, and the blinds have piles. Like, probably the guy in the small blind has about, like, 350K, and the guy in the big blind probably has, like, 225, right?
What's the read on both of them?
The guy in the small blind is a happy-go-lucky donk who's having the day of his life.
Is he aggressive, or is he just flatty?
He's just flatty, and he's coolering everyone. And, you know, he just has gotten lucky.
Wouldn't describe him as, like, a live sicko that wins?
No. He's like a 65-year-old guy who's, like, there with his wife, and he's, like, so happy. He's
perfect.
Like, taking pictures. He's, like, we're sitting in front of the... You know how they have that board that like shows you top 10 stacks like in any tournament, or like, you know, the screen.
Yeah.
We're sitting under it, and he's taking pictures and sending it to people because his name.
Okay, mm-hmm. Perfect. And now big blind,
which I probably would do too, but but regardless. And then the big blind is he looks like a online sicko. He, you know, because he's like youngish, got like glasses, like kind of like math nerdy kind of look. And
I love that.
And some people that also look that way, and I can't remember if someone I like that was a known pro came and talked to him, but like enough people were coming over to him that he seemed to like absolutely know what he was doing. But I will say, really hadn't done anything. Like he came to the table probably like three orbits before, maybe four orbits before, and was like pretty silent, like didn't really, he had a lot of chips and he just wasn't getting involved much. He was just kind of like writing it out.
All right.
So those are
pretty good tells. That's important information.
Yep. So I open, and I mean, I think it's perfectly fine to open there. Any disagreements?
Go ahead, Derek.
I think opening, we have king three suited, right? Not king
no,
three
it's
off.
King three.
It's king three off. Off.
Oh, it's king three off. I don't hate the open. I'd much rather have king three suited. Obviously, I don't know that I'd open there 100% of the time, but I don't hate the open.
Yeah.
Especially with the big blind being pretty quiet so far, and it's not like he's, like, 3-bet happy or anything. Like, I'd probably open.
Yeah, it's interesting because, like, the small blinds is, like, super flatty, so that's scary. But he's not in the big blind. But even if he's in the big blind, I think it's a good open. I'm with KB. I'm not opening 100%. Diego, I know you're not opening 100%.
No, not opening 100%, but I have a king, right?
It's beauty to have the king blocker. That is massive. Yeah. So, yeah, opening is probably optimal here. Yeah, it is optimal. If they're not reshipping to – yeah, I mean
– yeah, they're not – like, they might be 3-betting me, and I will get 3-bet sometimes, like, and I will get 3-bet light sometimes, but I don't think enough.
Not the small blind.
Not the small blind. Never the small blind. Never,
and the big
ever,
blind's
ever.
Probably more likely to flat than 3-bet. That's just where the big blind's gone. Okay, so good. We're good.
Yeah, but don't I have a good stack for him to 3-bet me? Like I'm up for my – like, I have to make a decision for my life at that point.
Where poker's gone now is, like, the math we get out of defending out of the big blind is, like,
right. Yeah.
4.5 to 1, mm-hmm. 5 to 1.
Yeah.
So he's getting such a good price to just flat his full range.
Yep.
But, yeah, he's going to 3-bet some of the time. But you have a king blocker. That's good.
I have a king blocker. Yeah.
Yeah. And even though he's relatively new to the table, I mean, you said he's been there 3 or 4 of us and hasn't really done anything. So I don't think we have to be like, wow, this guy's going to 3-bet me for sure.
Absolutely.
And look, you got to take some blinds to living in these
days. Well, this is a big pot if we get folds.
Yeah, right. So, okay. So I think we all agree the open is good. And so the big blind does call. The small blind flows, big blind calls. And the pot is – I'm sorry. The
8K, 10K.
Yeah, what is the pot?
Annie's are 50. Annie's are 50, so 400.
You straight
min
down,
raised? Yeah, straight min raised. I wrote down pot is like 20K.
Yeah, perfect. That's where exactly what it is. Maybe like
Mark, you ever go bigger here? Like just to because
well,
big blinds are flatting so
oh,
often.
You mean open bigger?
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, like big blinds.
For sure I do.
Cuz big blinds like, sounds like he's like a capable possible internet math guy who is going
to
flat 100% of the time when we min raise. Maybe
to,
we go
to
bigger.
Make the math incorrect.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Yeah.
And we kind of have the bottom of our opening range here in these two stacks. So, yeah, I think bigger is definitely fine, like 2.5x, even bigger than that. Like, but, yeah, I'm also fine with him calling here because we have position, we have a good holding. Our stack is a little bit weird, though, where, like, we lose a pot, we kind of get in that, not danger territory, but push-fold territory.
Yeah.
But that's a minor thing. I think that's interesting, though, KB, for sure.
It is interesting. I like the thought process there. Okay, so the flop is King-King-9 with 2 clubs. And reminder, I have King-3, and I don't have a club. And so the pot is 20K. He checks. KB, what are you betting here? And Mark knows the hand. Mark knows what I did, so I don't want to ask you.
Well, first of all, I got to think if I'm going to bet at all.
I think that's a very good.
Good question.
I think it's especially with stack sizes. We have, I think 76 back.
Yeah, that sounds about right.
So we have 76K. There's 20K in the pot. So,
like, we don't need 3 streets to get all the chips in. So maybe we want to give him a little bit of a chance to catch up. I don't know. Like, we're expected to bet here so often that I'm tempted to bet just super small. But there's also a part of me that kind of wants to check back. Any thoughts on what his impression of you is?
No, that's important. That's important.
Good question. Let me think. I three bet folded once. I opened and folded to a 3-bet once or twice. I think.
So if you 3-bet folded and open once and folded, he knows you're capable.
Yeah. Yes.
Like,
that
especially
would be,
with your sizing being good. Like
that,
I know
that would be clear. And then I remember this might be important too. The guy, the happy-go-lucky guy next to me, I screwed up the blinds, like putting out my blinds once, like 2 times in a row. And he like, you know, he was like talking to everyone, having such a good time. He was like. He said, "You're a hell of a poker player, but you don't know how to count blinds or something like that." So I don't know if that influences him. Like, I mean, he wasn't there for a long time, so I don't know if he's taking stock in the fact that guy thought I was a good poker player. But that was
so like you were saying, like Mark, you were saying, like, because he's 3-bet folded and he's open and folded to 3-bets, like, that he probably thinks he's capable. But he could also see that as kind of like he's a little bit weak.
I don't know. Like, 3-bet folding off of, like, I'm guessing, like, 25 to 30 bigs.
Yeah,
like, I mean, exactly. I mean, if he's 3-bet folding, it means he's not, like, only 3-betting the nuts.
Right, yeah, that's
true. It was like 30 bigs that I threw.
So 30. It's like, it's king, 9, 2 clubs, right?
Yeah.
So, like, KB's, I mean, like, both arguments are good. I think we should be checking back here some of the time, and I think we should be betting here some of the time. Now, what percentages, that depends on who the villain is and what our perceived range is, like, what he thinks about our play, stack size, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So, I think you're spot on.
Yeah, yeah, I think... Shit. I'm so wavering here. I think I might.
Okay,
like,
and you're sizing
here.
If you do bet.
20K
in the pot.
Like yeah, I'm gonna bet like 7,500 or something.
Yeah. I think I said 8K.
You said 7 to 8. So I'm betting, and my rationale for betting is there's so many scary cards that come for him as well, that if I'm going to get a street,
right.
I'll probably get it, you know, like, I'm more likely to get it here than I'm going to get it later on, because he'll shut down, I think, a lot, like, or just not get involved as the board gets worse for him, or the board just gets better and better for him, and I need to protect my hand a little bit.
I think on a non-club, non-flush board, I think checking back is maybe optimal, but, I mean, if you're c-betting full range here, like,
non two club board, I would be checking back.
I mean, not always. Especially if he's good, he's going to float all his ace highs and stuff. I mean, there's an argument for both. But what did you make it, Diego? I believe you made it too big.
I made it 10.5.
Yeah, which I think is too big.
Too big, right?
Just based on stack sizes and stuff.
Right.
It's a little thing.
Yeah, it doesn't give him a lot of room. Doesn't give him a lot of room to like float or make any like to. Check raise the flop, or like he can't really make many moves there. Because
now it puts. Okay, so what happens? You bet 10-5 and.
I bet 10-5 and he calls.
So 41K in the pot.
42, yeah, I wrote 42 in the pot. The turn is the queen of diamonds.
What do we have back now? 60 ish? 64?
We have about. So what did we say? We started with 85, so we have 77. Then we have 67, I guess.
Okay, 67K back. Okay, perfect.
67
back. 2K in the pot. Okay, turn is
the queen of diamonds. King 9, queen of diamonds, two clubs out there. Okay.
It sucks a little because it.
Well, listen to the action first, and then because that changes, it's going to change.
He leads 15K.
Whoa.
Setting up a perfect river shove, like a little, it's like two-thirds pot river shove on the river, which is worth noting.
Yeah.
Diego has like
16
bigs back, and now he's leading 15K. So king, 9, 2 club, queen turn, and he leads 15 into 42. What do we make of that, KB?
It could be a lot of things where like he floated a hand with a lot of backdoor equity that now picked up even more equity, and he is trying to get to a river, like, you know, like gut shots, straight draws with a backdoor.
This
well, queen 10 would have been a queen 10 would give him a pair, and 10 jack would give him the nuts.
Yeah,
like he doesn't. I don't know if he has ace 10 here. I mean, he does, but he's also shoving that pre some of the time.
Like, I guess a better example is, like, a club draw that now picked up a gutter.
Yeah.
Maybe that's a better example of a hand that had, like, had some backdoor equity that
I feel like there's just, like,
with,
a lot of tens or a lot of jacks. Not pairs of tens and pairs of jacks, but, like, hands with tens and jacks in his
absolutely.
Range.
Absolutely.
Which is, like, exactly what KB is saying and exactly what I'm thinking.
Absolutely. I agree 100%. We do have to be careful because, like, he's probably not, like, okay, so his gut shot flush draws, a lot of those are going to raise, get in on the flop. They're not going to fold the turn, which is fine, because if we get called by those, it's fine. But now, like, they're blocked, too, with the queen, like, that takes away, and we're actually beat to one of those gut shots. Queen 10 Jack beats us. Flopped gut shots, that is. So, I mean, we have to be a little bit careful here. Like, sure.
Yeah.
I mean, what do you think about shoving, Derek? Because I think that's an interesting option.
I think, it is an interesting option. My initial thought was, okay, if he's setting up a river shove, part of me wants to just call to give him the chance to shove his misdraws.
That's exactly what I was thinking.
Yeah, I like that. I like that thought process a lot.
That's exactly what I was thinking and exactly why I just called.
But the problem is, only problem with that is, and, oh, go ahead, Derek, finish, sorry.
Oh, well, I was going to say, but also, like, there are going to be times where he just misses and just decides, wow, this guy really has trips, and I'm just going to go ahead and check him up now, you know? So, like a non, we keep saying non-zero in this podcast, but a non-zero percent of the time when we shove here, we get called by a gutter, you know, like a gutter and a flush draw, or a open ender and a flush draw, or whatever, you know, whatever.
Yeah,
those
so he does call with
make.
Worse some of the time. But he also has a beat some of the time.
Right. And that, yeah, that's kind of where I'm torn. I'm
like, it's going to be damn near impossible. I mean, but I mean, there's
it's really hard for me to ever fold.
But
part of me is like, well, if we're not folding, maybe give him that chance to barrel.
I think we should like tank and like not like sigh call, but like, you know what I mean? Like, you don't want to like roll your eyes and be like, fine, I call. Yeah. Like, but you know, like.
Yeah. Kind of make it look like maybe
we
have
a
flush draw.
Yeah,
we're just going to go ahead. And,
yeah. No, I probably thought for like 30 seconds, like, you know, not instant called, but I just thought it through a little bit. Came to the conclusion that KB had. And I called. All right. So.
Which I like too, if anyone cares.
Let me restate the board for you. King, King, nine, queen, two clubs. What's the worst card in
the deck?
Two flop
thoughts.
Two flop clubs. What's the worst card in the deck for the river?
There's two of them.
Two of them. What are the two? Yeah, exactly. What are the two worst cards in the deck?
No.
Ace of clubs and...
No.
No?
Queen, king, king, nine, two clubs, queen turn.
Actually, I don't mind an ace.
King, king, nine, queen. Oh,
yeah,
a tenor
of
jack.
And, yeah, and the two clubs. Hits the river. So we got a three card flush. We got a four card straight on board. And what's in the pot now? What do we say? If it was 42 in the pot, and
72.
72, and we have like 52 behind.
Mm-hmm.
And he leads 22K into me. Puke in my
so
mouth.
Gross. Why can't it just be like the three?
Yeah, that's pretty much what I was thinking too.
We fold.
Yeah, it sucks, but I think we just
have literally
like,
the worst
run
out.
Really...
Well, I went all in. Nah, I'm just kidding.
Yeah,
I
think, Diego, we had a long talk about the turn and about jamming and whatnot, and I think, like, leaving in the bluffs,
like Katie
said, is good, especially against someone you think is, like,
I agree. I think he's capable. I think he's capable. Like, we haven't seen him do much, but this is like where like a really good player awakens and like takes advantage of all that. And I think he's one of those guys.
Right.
So, yep. Unfortunately,
you think he has like the Jack nine
that, that's,
club? Like,
yeah,
seems like
Jack eight of clubs, Jack nine of clubs. Like, seems really likely to me.
He has a lot of Jack tens. I think like line you'll see here is like a full house and like a made straight. Like
Jack
with
queen.
Diego's stack, like. Just don't know how often Diego's like going to be continuing with like anything but a king on the turn. So like I kind of think he's more nutted, but like it's really hard when we don't know much about him. But Diego said he was nittier, so I think he's prone to have it here.
Yeah. I mean, he didn't like completely shut down for three orbits. Like he opened a couple times, stole some blinds. Like, but I don't remember anything like that stands out like that. Other than that, he had the aura of a good player, and a lot of good players came talk to him. But he wasn't like super tight. He was just like not
good.
He was good. He was definitely good. You could see he was good, a good player. Like definitely, like he just like had that thing where like you know. So he sits down next to the happy-go-lucky guy who's like giggling and talking, and like the happy-go-lucky guy's like, making jokes with him, and he's like being nice, but like. not like kind of over it
to get
you know?
His chips.
Yeah, he was just kind of over it. Like you know, like probably like he seemed like I've been here all summer, so, like sitting next to guys like this,
yeah.
And just like.
Yeah. He was feeling like me. He's like, I hate everybody at my table.
All right, so that's my hand. Yeah, I mean, I feel like I think we all agree on pretty much every street, and I, you know, was just an unfortunate run out. And then the rest of the tournament, I shoved eights into Gavin Smith's jacks for most of the rest of the chips, and that was about it. But it was fun. Make a nice deep run. Deep run in the World Series is just such a nice feeling.
Yeah, that was fun. So what did he have?
I didn't pay him $40.
I would have.
I probably should have. Although at that stage of the tournament, he probably would not have taken $40.
You should have just said, "Hey man, so I'm going to do this again on the podcast, and I need to know what you have. Can I give you $40?"
Well, if he's a listener, he should tell us.
Yes, please. All right, so you guys want to do my hand?
Yes.
All right. So Mark knows this hand.
Yeah, I'm going to keep quiet.
I think, right?
Okay.
Okay. I don't know if Diego knows it or not, but here it goes. This is in the Monster Stack. And much like many of my other tournaments, we're cruising along very nicely. We built our stack up, you know, to probably 2,700 or 27,000 by the first break, and then 45,000, and dinner was great. And this is, I believe this was the last level of the night, or maybe... second to last level, somewhere in that range. We're at 306 that much right now.
You have like heaps, like you have like.
I have 60K. We started with 15. Tables bit like really really good table, like couple of decent competent players, but I have a really good read. I've been at the same tables for quite a while, feeling just like super comfortable, like just loving life. So I'm under the gun. Again, I have about 60K. Villain in the hand is under the gun 1. He has about 50K. So, 300, 600, we look down at the ace, deuce of hearts. So,
an ace, deuce of hearts. Near the end of the night?
I don't always open here. You know, it's kind of like your king 3 hand. Like, I don't open it 100% of the time. But I think this deep at a table where we're not seeing a lot of resistance and we have really good reads and, like, we can play post very effectively, I think, with a hand like ace, deuce of hearts. I think I open it up pretty wide.
Yeah.
Or a pretty high percentage.
You could pass on, like, maybe the non-wheel suited aces, but, like, 100 bigs deep, you should be opening the wheel suits, for sure.
Yeah, that's kind of how I felt. So I open to 1,500.
With Annie's, we should be very clear on that. Like, I don't think you should be open ace, deuce of hearts under the gun, no Annie's.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, yeah, and there are, and they're kind of big Annie's in the World Series.
Yeah, they're 100. They're 100. Yeah, not in the main event, but in all the other events, they were 100. So
that's big.
Yeah, that is big.
That's 100.
Dan Harrington, it's coming back. Be ready.
And I guess it's worth like from okay. So first, I'll tell like my image. Like I've been pretty. Like, unusually aggressive. Like, I don't know if Mark even remembers this part, but this is the tournament where I was, like, I was tweeting fairly regularly, and it was, like I had three bets.
I do remember that.
Yeah.
I don't remember this hand, but I do remember
ace
you were...
ace, deuce of clubs.
Yeah, I had, like, three bet the ace, deuce of clubs and had to show it down. I had three...
That wasn't
like, I had been
table.
Opening a lot. I don't remember for sure.
Well, I mean...
But I remember, like, I continued to be, like, very active the entire night. Like, I had never really slowed down very much. So even if it was at a different table, like, I'm fairly active. Under the gun one, who's right on my left, obviously, has been very tag. Like, pretty quiet, like, older gentleman, hadn't gotten out of line, hadn't seen him three bet, just like, you know, like if he was at my table on an online tournament, he would have been running like 16, 14, 6
so,
or something like that. You know, like just a very average
so
player.
So here, he's going to be really tough.
Yeah. So I open the 1,500. He makes it 3K. Folds back around to me. What
yeah,
do you do,
you
Diego?
You make it 1,500. He makes it 3K.
Yeah.
It's ace, deuce of hearts, and he has 50K to start the hand?
Yeah, yeah, he has about 50K.
He's playing out of position. God, he says such a strong. Like, the only reason to call is, like, well, if I flop a flush, then I'm going to get a lot of chips. But, like, when you flop the flush, you're really not even going to get a lot of chips probably from him.
We also have the wheel. It's not just the flush.
The wheel, right, the wheel, too.
And, like, if he had, like, we can flop two pair. Like,
you know, I mean, like, I'm
the same reason we're flatting threes here is why we need to flat these suited ones. And he's making it so small, but and we
and
know
the thing,
he's
that,
not
I mean, that's the thing. It's such a small, like it's 1500 into such a big pot. Like if it was
yeah.
40,
basically giving up 2.5 of my 98 big
blinds. If it was 45, I would just
be a
flop
with
a fold.
Does he cover you?
No, he has
ten K
less than
okay.
Less
so than he's
me.
Really deep too.
Yeah,
it's important the effective stack as well.
Yeah.
Yes. So yeah. Like if this guy's doing this with
like
you know 16K or something.
What's our range here on him? Like,
I think it's pretty tight. Like I think
Jacks are better. Queens are better.
I'm gonna say Jacks are better, and I'm not even sure he's doing this with tens or ace queens.
Right. I don't think. He's
I don't even know. Yeah. I don't even know about Jacks. If you're saying as tight as he is. Like,
yeah.
And I think it's like even the top like queens and like.
Yeah.
Queens plus, I don't ace king. I don't even know, but
so
yeah,
it's
sure.
It's queens, kings, reduced aces, and reduced ace king. So small that I think it's against that range since we can get a lot of chips if we do flop.
Especially, he'll probably overplay some of these hands.
Yeah, that's what I mean. That's exactly what I'm saying. Like if we flop two pair or the flush, we can, you know, probably get something from. Okay, all right, let's go.
Yeah.
Call.
So the flop comes Jack 3-5.
3-5.
With two hearts.
Oh. Wow, Diego just blew the load. Queen X Al 5.
I mean, I'm happy, but I'm like, fuck, this is going to cost me a lot. And if I don't hit it, it's going to cost me a lot. You know. Check call.
Well, let's hear.
All right. I can hear a check call. What?
Like I don't want to get.
Like
I don't want to get.
I mean, obviously,
like, I don't want to go battle with this. Okay, so here's my. Well, I'm sorry. Did you want to say something before I?
Well, I was just gonna say I was gonna say like I generally agree with checking because I don't think there's any reason. Like what hand are we ever like leading with here that looks like normal? You know, like where he's gonna look at us like, oh shit.
Really give him that tight of a range too.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
I mean, check call. I don't check raise here because I don't really want to go to war with this right now. Like, I'd rather just, like, let him bet, reevaluate the turn. Like, if I want to call a turn bet, depending on what the turn actually is, and keep going with it and keep this pot relatively small if I don't hit it. But I'm not ready to get it all in here against that range because I don't think, you know, I just, like, queens and kings are probably – I don't know. I don't think we can get him off.
Yeah, the only hand that we get him to fold by check raising is ace king. And if we just check call, he's probably going to check that back on the turn, and we can bet like the river.
Well, I like that.
Brick.
Yes. Checks back the turn, lead the river.
And
say, oh, it's so fucking sexy. Nice.
Yeah.
I didn't even think about that, but that makes it even better. Okay.
Yeah.
So what do you bet?
So
Davey is like, yeah, fuck.
Yeah. So that would have been a really good line to take. I think what kind of fucked me up in this hand is his sizing. So we.
Oh yeah, this
check.
Is important. We should, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, and he bets 7K, even, which is basically pot. I don't remember if it's like slightly under pot or slightly over. I guess
say
we could calculate it.
Say pot.
3-6. It's pot. It's like literally pot.
Deuce of hearts.
Yeah. He's like, oh shit.
Okay, so KB, now thought process when he bets pot.
At this point, I'm pretty convinced that he has kings or queens or aces. And I kind of discount aces a little bit because I have an ace. I'm like, this guy has kings or queens. Like, and I'm not even
– yeah.
And I'm leaning way more
towards
kings.
And, like, the bare times he has jacks, too.
Yeah, bare times he has jacks.
Yeah, we don't really think that often. But, of course, it's going to happen. Okay.
Sure.
So he's nutted. And, of course, I mean, I don't know. Like, I think some people bet ace-king this way, too. I mean, I've seen it, so I'm not going to rule that out. They 3-bet small and then bet pot.
Yeah.
Like, I've seen it.
Right. Yeah.
I doubt
yeah,
it,
no doubt about it. It's like we were saying earlier, like, never say never. He can't have ace king there, for sure. So, in my mind, my thought process is, I am essentially a favorite against any of the hands I'm giving him, and there's occasionally times where he'll fold, not very often. And if I'm not going to give up on this pot, then I'm just going to go ahead and like put a bunch of chips in right now and essentially commit myself to the pot, which is probably not the wisest thinking.
I can give up on this pot depending on how it runs out and what goes on, and
especially to the sizing.
Yeah, and I think you can realize your equity by just calling.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah, I think it was, because now there's 14K in there. I'm like if he had made it, if he had bet 3,200, I think I would have just called.
Right. No,
as weird as that sounds, like I think I would have just called.
What you're saying. I get what you're saying.
But when he makes a 7,
think,
I'm just like,
yeah, I think
shit,
you just,
out, you know?
I think you think that he's gonna put you on a set and like tank fold his queens or kings after.
Yeah, I mean, there was a part of me that wasn't even really expecting him. Like, I was like, well, there is a percentage of the time he folds, but when he doesn't, let's get the chips in now so I can max. I want to see two cards. Like, I want to get all my equity out of this hand, and I'm ahead of almost
aces,
everything.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you're
like,
not
I'm behind
aces, behind
aces and jacks.
And that's all good thinking. But, like, what you really need to think about is, like, the fact that you have 100 big blinds.
Yeah.
Yeah. And, like, I think what I had said earlier is important. I was cruising along just fine. Like, I wasn't having any problem picking up chips. I was winning pots, like, without a showdown. You know, I like, my 3-bets were working. My C-bets were working. It was the opposite of day 2 of the extended levels tournament where nothing was working. Like, everything was working. So there's just no need to get 100 big blind. Well, effectively 80 or whatever.
I mean, you are going
no to
get
that
you are gonna get folds sometimes when you're – But you said you're ahead of those anyway.
Against the – I don't know if he's folding over pairs when he bets pot here on this exact texture board, especially as what – like,
well,
I don't know.
We'll go back to that non-zero chance. Like, it's not a lot. Sometimes he does, but not that often.
The good thing about just calling is like, sure, the price – like, I mean, I'm not in love with the price, but, like, he's going to pay us off when we get
that's
there.
Exactly.
With
that's what I said.
And
that's
I don't think
saying.
He's folding that often.
You basically – you will realize your equity – in this by calling, and you also give yourself to get away from it. Give yourself the chance to get away from it.
Oh, we can just check fold this round based on his sizing. I mean, he's probably just shove.
Right. If he makes a 21K on a non good turn card, you could just say fuck it, close.
Yeah, and we have 80 bigs back, and we're just like, okay, sweet.
Yep, I didn't think about this.
Yeah, I think I had visions of me just calling. So now there's 21K in the middle. And the turn is like the 9 of diamonds, and then he makes it like 20K, and I'm like, shit, I have to fold. I really want to see this.
Yeah, but like, I'm like,
it's flawed things.
Like, fuck it, folding at that point, and never thinking about it again.
Yep, it was pain. So I make it 20K, he shoves, and now I've obviously committed myself, getting an amazing price. I call, and he has kings. And without the King of Hearts, too, which is kind of
sick. Yeah, so like, Derek's actually a favorite out. Here.
Yeah. Yeah, look, I mean, you got fucking billion chips.
16 outs twice.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I won't lie. I think I said this to Mark or somebody. Like, there was definitely a part of me that was like, ooh, 110K at 300, 600? Yes, please. Like, there was definitely a part
which
of me
that
was like,
I'm
going to get all this shit. Like, I'm going to get all this chips. Yes, it's a huge mistake. Like, you can't win the tournament on day one.
But I mean, like, if you just went through all this and you realize that you have, like, favorite equity here, like, I get it why you'd want to do what you did, but this is where it's like, okay, maybe I'll sound stupid here, but, like, this is the, like, Helmuth, like, survival, like, playing, you know, like, just this is a tournament where your life does matter and, like, you can pick spots and, like, you're not going to want to play – obviously, to preserve your tournament life all the time, but, like, it's, like, super risky at that deep of a stack. Like, you can just...
especially with such a nutted range. Like, this hand changes so much when we do have fold equity, and like, I know we're saying some, but
not much.
Yeah, and it's just too much. Like, if we have like 40 bigs and we play this hand this way, and he bets like half pot, like, sure, check raise, get it in is great. Because we have fold equity, whatever, we have a really good hand. And seeing two cards is important. But yeah, I think you realize this, like, literally when we talked about it at the house with the other guys, I think you realized in like 5 seconds you made a mistake.
Yeah.
And it's funny to say a mistake and then he was favored.
Yeah. That's funny.
So, like, he could have come home with 120K, and that's all great. Yeah. But obviously, we have to look at it from, like, how we get better and what the...
You know what's interesting about this, too, is that if KB had the threes, like we're learning how to, like, don't slow play it. You know? Like, if KB had threes, this is, like, the fucking... Like, he on the flop, he would have gotten paid, and, like, don't check call and just...
Yeah,
know.
Especially when a heart scares action, too.
Yeah, exactly. Like, okay, this...
I think, like, I actually don't hate my play if the board is such that against his range I have more fold equity. Yeah. So if it's like, let's say I have the 4-7 of hearts and the flop is like ace-3-5 with two hearts, then I can get things like kings and queens.
And even ace king sometimes.
You know?
Yeah.
Yeah. But I think, again, like, when I'm almost 100% sure that he has aces, kings, queens,
it's
folded.
It's sizing, exactly. And anytime you create more fold equity, that's really, I mean, that's a really good thing. That makes our hand way stronger.
Yep.
The only thing that I was happy about with the hand, if there's anything, and it's not really much to be happy about, is there was a part of me that almost just piled over a 7K. Like, I almost just made it 60. But I think if I ever had a chance to get him to fold, it was by making
it look like a set. Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Shoving looks like a draw.
Like,
raising looks like...
Clearly looks like a
I like that a lot. Danny and 13, give him props.
So. Yeah, thanks, Danny. You made me bust him up.
No, he always talks about raising instead of shoving to look stronger, even though when it looks like you're never raise folding, but just to look a little bit stronger, it makes total sense.
Yeah. So that was my fun story.
Well, good hand, though. Good hand to talk about. Cool.
Yep. So, cool. I guess we should wrap it up.
Yeah. Again,
since we're probably at about the 4-hour mark.
Is it?
I'm not even sure our podcast hosting service allows a podcast this big, but I'll try to get it
Could
through.
Could you imagine KB told us he forgot to record?
Oh,
could you imagine? He was like, oh shit, I forgot to press record.
It wouldn't be the first time something like that happened.
Did Mark fall asleep?
I've done that. I was just thinking in my head. I was like, the amount of fucking times I've done that making a video. But like, I made like an hour long video, and I used to make them like 4 hours in a row, and then I would just cut them. And I quickly realized that that was the dumbest thing ever when I had mic muted the whole fucking time.
Yeah, people might mute the mics is funny. Oh, man.
Like, I've got to be Jesus.
I know I had one, and this is probably boring talk at the end of a 4-hour podcast, but I had one. I did a podcast once, or we did a podcast once, where there was like a clicking, like every 5 seconds or something. It was it? Yeah. And not only was it an... Like that. Not only did that suck, but what made it worse is that I tried to fix the clicking by going through and literally hand removing every click for like an hour and a half long podcast, and I spent probably 4 hours trying to do that before I realized this is not going to work. And then we re-recorded. So I made it worse by trying to fix the problem.
You have heart. You have king 4 or 5 bet heart.
Yeah, it's like shove.
I wish I had more brain.
Hey, me too.
Nice. All right. Well,
cool. So let's wrap it up. But let's quickly let guys know what's happening at TP, and then we'll go to
bed. Think the biggest thing is that we have a new pro that is actually his premiere series is live as we speak. Just went live 2 hours ago during the course of this podcast. Kyle, I grind this O'Neill, who is very well known in the Turbo MTT world. I believe he won a leaderboard a couple years back around it. Super well respected. I just watched his videos. They're fantastic. So I think everyone's going to really get a kick out of that. So I think that's the biggest thing. I think everyone who's been sitting here for 4 hours doesn't need to hear much else about what's going on, aside from that everyone's back from the World Series. You know, everyone is going to start studying again, and we got a new pro here to check out, especially if you play Turbo MTTs. This is the guy.
Yep, very excited about it. And if you want to see something pretty impressive, go check out his Stars 180 Man graph. Not only is his ROI really good, like 48%. I forget what it is. I might be making that number up, but it's good. But it's over some ridiculous number, like 100,000 180 mans or something. Like an absurd, absurd level of volume.
Super
so,
boss. Yeah, and he's been around a long time, which is also really impressive. I always look for pros that have been around for years because it's not easy mentally to stay in this game and win for so long.
And being able to, like, if you're around for a long time, it means that you're adjusting, like, to, like, you just have a mind that can adjust to the situation, like, in hand, but also the trends and things that are happening in poker, and that's, like, really impressive. You didn't just learn, like, memorize a strategy and, like, become robotic at it. You're a true thinker of the game, and that's what
absolutely that right. And you've evolved with the game too.
You've evolved with the game, right? Like, because like when I look at like the Pearl Jammers, like when I play at the World Series, like you always see Pearl Jammer, right? Because he's like tall and
7 feet tall.
Yeah, you know, and you just look at him like because he's always around. Like, and you look at him like that guy has been like a boss for like 7 years, right? And like he's like playing the mixed games, like, and those guys are like they're just. They have a natural talent for the game and the ability to adjust, and that's exactly what you're saying. Mark is spot on with Kyle.
Oh, yeah.
He's been doing it for this long. Like, a lot has changed. That's
One way I know that I'm going to like this guy, and then we'll wrap it up, is that you said the video's been live 2 hours. He's already posted a comment on his own video. So, yeah, and he's like, here's some mistakes I see. My sizing in an early position needs to be bigger. He points out some things, and he's like, go easy on me. So, I mean, like, he's literally watching his own videos and critiquing them to get better, which is a sign of
exactly
what I think going to be pretty great.
He's already got a bunch of upvotes as well.
Yep.
I thought you were going to say you like him because in his picture he's holding a beer. In his video thumbnail.
I want to give a shout-out to Darius Stutter, TV member.
Yes.
Run in the main. Carlos Welch. Everyone knows Carlos. Congrats for cashing in your first main. And then TPE's pro, Riverman 123, James Lambert, had a nice run, had 10K after day one and spun it into a nice cash. So congrats to those three.
Yeah, I wish we had mentioned those guys earlier on.
We get them in at the end, chirp.
Yeah. I want to make sure they hear it. Those guys were awesome on Twitter. They were posting the whole time, keeping everyone up to date, and it's nice to see TPEers go deep in the main.
Yep, absolutely. Cool. All right. Well, Mark, thank you very much for joining us. Thanks to everybody out there for listening. You've probably had to listen to this in two installments, so we appreciate the heart that you have to hang through on this one. And we'll be back very soon with another episode of the Tournament Poker Edge Podcast. See you guys. Hit me, raise it, baby, stay with me. Lock in intuition, play the cards with base to start. And after she's been hooked, I'll play the one that's on her heart. Oh, whoa, whoa, oh, whoa, whoa. I'll get her heart, show her what I got. Oh, whoa, whoa, oh, whoa, whoa. I'll get her heart, show her what I got. Gambling is fun when you're with me. I love it.
Russian roulette is not the same without a gun. And baby, when it's loving, it's not rough, it isn't fun, fun. Oh, whoa. She can't read a mind.